I got a thought for you, and I'm sure I'll catch some lovely Twitter love for this. But, you know, when you wear a mask, sure, all you're saying is, I don't want you to get sick. And if I wear a mask, right, that's me saying, I don't want you to get sick. It's just about respect, nothing else. Whatever your inner dialogue is, it's wrong. It's wrong. You wear a mask, and if everybody wore a mask, the virus can't go nowhere. I can't explain it no easier than that.
Bill, I think I'm turning into an old man because I don't care where kids' pants are. I care where your mask is. Stop sagging on your mask. Pull your mask off.
That's wonderful. And you know what, Billy? I am in full old guy mode, too. I swear to God I am. If I see somebody coming at me with no mask, I just yell, 6 feet! 6 feet!
Randy Bellman and the DVE Morning Show.
Billy hanging out with us live from Los Angeles, California, right now.
They closed the schools
out there this year. You get a homeschool Wilster.
They've been doing the Zoom thing. They did the Zoom thing towards the end of the year, and it looks like they're not going to be opening right now in September, and I'm completely behind that. I hate it for Will, but, you know, safety first, man.
Yeah. He's going to be senior, right?
Yeah, which really breaks my heart, but, you know, people are in work situations, and we'll get through it. We'll get through it.
He's a senior? Just keep... What?
Senior, buddy. Senior, I know.
What?
He rediscovered his bike this week, though, man. I think he just had enough of the parental units. He got on that bike. He's taking like 4 bike rides. I think he needs a break. And I don't blame the boy.
Oh, I would be going crazy. Yeah. I just imagine myself as a senior in high school being trapped with my parents and not being allowed really go hang out with my friends. No way.
It's for kids these days, it is the worst Twilight Zone episode ever.
Hi,
Bill.
You want to play another board game?
Bill, they don't have the alley. You got to have the alley. I mean, there's not a lot of social distancing going on back there.
No, I got an alley off the side of my house. That's good. But the bike is freedom for him, man. He's gone. He's gone on a bike. So I'm happy for him. You know, it's a little bit of freedom, a little bit of, you know, he just comes whipping around the neighborhood and a couple blocks over, you know, he's doing good with it. You know, he has days like everybody else, you know, we just got to go one more day. I tell him just one more day. Just one more day. Just got to win the war for 24 hours. That's it. We can do that. Mm-hmm. We're going to come out the other side.
I've had a couple of days during all this where I was like, well, there's a day. Nothing really happened today. Just did a day.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Exactly right. That's most days, dude. I mean, especially if you have younger kids, like for me, I'm done by 2:00 and I'm sitting on the ball like Cower with a lead. I'm just draining the clock. Just
running the clock, Billy. That's it. Run the clock. That's all there is.
That's so funny.
I'll tell you, I got into the PlayStation a little bit about a week ago, and that helped kill some time. That was nice. It's not productive at all, but at least it was fun.
No.
I was playing that. Will got me the Jedi game, the Fallen Order Jedi game. And I don't.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's like 9 levels on every PlayStation game. You know, there's easy, there's, you know, medium, the beginner, and then there's throw your controller through the TV. So I don't, I always just, I play it on the easiest level because if I can't be Harrison Ford in the real world, I'm still going to be him in the video game world. But the other day I'm moving my Jedi guy through the planet, and I found myself doing a Yinzer accent for my Jedi. So I was wandering him through the forest. God damn, mess with me. I'll force push you right through that tree. Don't make me pull out my saber. I'll dice you. I'll chip you like ham.
Harrison Ford, by the way, Harrison Ford turned 78 years old yesterday.
Wow.
And yeah.
Bill was Harrison Ave Ford.
I was Harrison Avenue. He's Harrison Ford. I'm Harrison Avenue. This is my Nova. This is my Nova. It made the East Liberty run in 4.5 minutes.
What do you think is the best Harrison Ford movie?
Oh, man.
Presumed Innocent. Tough.
Real? Oh, see, now that went deep. That's serious acting. Presumed Innocent is fantastic. I got to go, though, man. I'm sorry. I got to go the easy one. I got to go Raiders of the Lost Ark. That was the most fantastic, epic fantasy movie. The throwback to the matinees. I mean, it was just, that was fantastic. Well, for me, Raiders.
What's he been bad in?
Nothing.
He's been in bad movies.
That's like asking
Sabrina remake.
What has Colin Farrell been good in?
Come on,
like you the polar like opposite. I just don't think he's ever had the right role. That's it. Okay, now and what else?
He was good in the Jeff Bridges movie where he's the country star, but Bad Blake.
Yeah,
what the hell's that?
He had to hold it together for a minute and a half. Okay.
Wild Heart, or what's that one called?
Is it Wild Heart or Wild at Heart? I can't remember. Crazy Heart.
Crazy Heart.
Crazy Heart. Was.
Crazy Heart, 2009. That was a great movie. Colin Farrell is great in Bruges. He is very good in Crazy Heart. And I would Seven Psychopaths. Seven Psychopaths, very funny. Very good movie. If one of those Martin McDonagh movies, the one about the one the Oscar a couple of years ago. I can't remember the name of it now. The one with Frances McDormand. Mm. You know what I'm talking about? Three Billboards.
I did.
And he did Bruges.
He was great in Three Billboards. I got to give him credit for that. He was great in Three Billboards.
So there's a lot.
My point was Harrison Ford hasn't missed. He doesn't miss.
Did you ever see The Lobster?
No.
Another good Colin Farrell movie. Okay, I'm done praising Colin Farrell.
I'm going to look that up. I'm going to look it up. I'm going to keep an open mind. I'm going to look it up.
It was directed by that guy, that Yorgos Lanthimos, that won the Oscar for The Favorite last year. And all of his movies are like totally bizarre.
Okay.
Remember that dude?
I'm watching kind of a bizarre one right now on Amazon that's pretty interesting called The Loop. The problem is there's only 8 episodes and now I'm jammed up. There's going to be nothing. There's nothing. I don't know what's going to happen.
Billy, have you watched Yellowstone?
Yes. Finally got into that. It's fantastic. Fantastic show.
Really?
The one that I'll tell you, the one that I wolfed through, man, that I just, we blew through it in a month and there's 6 seasons of it, is Bosch. And I was nervous because I read all the books and I was like, oh, please don't screw this. Because like the minute, you know, Tom Cruise became Jack Reacher, that was over for me. I could no longer read those books. Jack Reacher's like 6'3". And then Tom Cruise is like, hey, all right.
Yeah, all right.
Standing on the box.
Every Tom Cruise movie is, he's doing great. Now, here's every Tom Cruise movie. He's doing great. Then something bad happens. He has one shot of whiskey and takes a walk in the rain, and then it works out. So I was real worried that they were going to mess up Bosch. But I got to tell you, man, Titus Wellington, and you probably remember him from Deadwood. Boy, he kills it. It's just a great series. If you're looking for one, that's a great one.
And the shot from his house at night, I just love that shot.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
I want to go back to Harrison Ford, which is why we started on this.
Okay, sorry.
End with this.
Okay.
This is the run of movies Harrison Ford had after Star Wars. So he did Star Wars 1977. Then he did Force 10 from Navarone. Apocalypse Now. Don't forget, he was in American Graffiti before that. All right. He did Apocalypse Now. Raiders of the Lost Ark, Blade Runner, Return of the Jedi, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, Classic. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Witness, Classic. The Mosquito Coast, Frantic, which is an awesome movie. Frantic is
great,
incredibly
movie.
Good.
Great movie.
Yes. Working Girl, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Presumed Innocent, Regarding Henry, Patriot Games, The Fugitive, Clear and Present Danger,
Damn.
Sabrina, The Devil's Own, Air Force One. That takes you to 1997. So that was his 20-year run. How many people had a better box office than that in those 20 years?
I can't think of one, man. That's a
How
movie
are you star. Han Solo?
That's a movie star.
And Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Come on.
You're done right there. That's it. I don't know how you. Yeah, that's amazing.
That's
and the fact that he never. Sly here's Stone. The real testament. Yeah, go ahead. Yes,
yeah. I was going to say, but that's the fact Rocky that he never Rambo. Got.
The fact that he never though, like he could still go turn and do dramatic movies without you going. You never went. Oh, that's Han Solo. You go. Oh, that's Harrison Ford. I don't know how he mm-hmm. did that. That's pretty amazing.
Not Good too point. Bad. Not too bad.
Cause.
Billy Gunn.
Not too shabby.
Not too shabby. Yeah, by the way, he did The Call of the Wild last year, which was not a great movie. He's done The Secret Life of Pets. You know, he's done a couple.
Yeah,
but you do that so you get insurance. Two. That's just about keeping your insurance up. That's all that is.
He was good I did a movie with his Branch dog. Rickey.
Too. You have to sometimes.
Whatever happened to that movie?
Nothing. It opened and closed on the same flight.
Wait. Which movie?
It was a movie I did called Dancer and the Dame. It's me talking to a German shepherd solving a crime. It's terrible.
No, it's not.
It's good for kids. It's good for kids. Good kids movie. That's all. You can watch that with your kids. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember that ever making it out.
No, I don't think it ever did. Went right to streaming. I'm surprised it's stuck to the tape.
Lou from Mike and Molly is in it, isn't he?
Yeah, Lou's in there. And then my other friend, Michael Bottoluco, and my buddy, John Mariano. Figured we're doing a low-budget film no one's going to see. I'm putting three of my friends in it.
Michael Bottoluco, Babyface Nelson in
correct
the Coen Brothers movie.
He was Berluti in the practice name. For a long time too. Really wonderful guy, good actor too.
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? Is the movie I was trying to think of. Yes. That's Billy Gardell.
Yes.
Hanging out with us. Always good to talk guys. With you, there. Love you, cousin. Guys,
I love you. Thanks, I Bill. Love you very much. Please, take care of each other.
Stones. 102.5 DV. It's the DV morning show from It's Only Rock and Roll. Dance Little Sister. I'm excited about the reissue of Goat's Head Soup. I think that's going to be pretty crazy. Jimmy Page playing on a cut with the Rolling Stones. I never even heard of that. That's something that you'd think was so big that everybody would be like, you heard about the time that Page played with the Stones? But mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever even had that conversation. So I'm looking forward to checking that out. On the way for you, Susan Copen will be filling in for Val Porter with your news the rest of the morning. I always like hanging with Susan. Tim Benz will have your sports. The bombshell dropped from the Washington Post in a weird way because the speculation was so rampant about Daniel yes. Snyder. It didn't have as big of an impact as I think it would have had there been no tip off that a big story was coming. It seemed to actually work in Daniel Snyder's favor. The story is terrible. It reflects so poorly on the organization, but the speculation was that he was going to be doing life in jail for what they were going to yes. find out. So,
they made us believe that there was going to be sex trafficking or some sort of drug cartel ring. I mean,
right.
the speculation was wild.
Right. So, we're going to talk a little bit later on with Les Carpenter. He was one of the contributors to that Washington Post story. And his name isn't on the byline, but he was one of the guys who was doing the legwork, so to speak, which is probably not the word you want to use when talking about this story, since a lot of it had to do with gawking at women in the Redskins facility, including staring at women's legs as they walked up stairwells, and trainers just unabashedly staring at women going, no, go ahead. Yeah. And also there's like some of the harassment phrases I'd never heard of. I had to look a couple up. I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah. You spent a good deal of time yesterday on Urban Dictionary, or what happened?
Your ass is like a wagon. I'm like, what the hell does that mean? I never heard of that. I mean, I know you shouldn't say it to a coworker. I know that.
No. Mm-mm.
I knew that much.
Not appropriate.
Not okay. Yeah. So,
you really shouldn't tell them their ass looks like anything.
No, unless it's on fire.
You shouldn't. Yeah, you should say it looks like your ass is on fire right now. Where were you just sitting? Because whatever that was is on fire.
Right. I'm trying to be helpful here. I'm not harassing you. Your ass is on fire. Oh, leave me alone, Reginald. I don't need that kind of documentary. Literally. Literally. I mean, it's in fuego. Yeah. Enough locker room talk in the boardroom. We have to call the fire department. I get it.
I get it. You like my ass.
No, it's on fire. Tim Benz has your sports when we come back. DVE.
DVE Sports.
Tim Benz filling in for Mike Pursuta with your sports right now on the DVE Morning Show.
It is brought to you by Kia. Now, this time yesterday, we were trying to figure out what was going to be in the Washington Post story about the Washington Redskins. The salacious predictions were spinning around the internet as late as 10 o'clock when we got off the air and all the way up through afternoon drive, to be honest with you. And once the story hit roughly around 5:30 a.m., well, it wasn't good at all. But if you're looking for the wildly salacious rumors to rise to the level of forcing Dan Snyder to sell the team as previously reported, I don't think this is it. The story goes like this. There were 15 different women, one on the record, who made claims of sexual harassment and essentially hostile sexual culture at the Washington Redskins offices. However, the wild rumors about pimping out the cheerleaders, Dan Snyder-led orgies, and presumably Jay Gruden's foot fetish were not in the story at all. So none of that happened. If you were looking for an account that made the Redskins front office look like a 1980s style top floor of Stratton Oakmont with Jordan Belfort in charge from Wolf of Wall Street, didn't quite get to that level either. Kind of made it sound like if you went out for a football team function, or if you went out to the bar after a training camp afternoon session, you were probably going to get hit on by somebody who worked on the front office staff. But there was no implication of Dan Snyder. There's no implication of the coaches. There's no implication even of Bruce Allen. Go ahead, Bill. I can see you looking to get in there.
I was just going to say, it made me start to wonder, Tim, was Daniel Snyder behind these leaks on Reddit? Like, did he cheat and put it so crazy that when it actually came out there, it seemed like nothing? Because
smart.
No, I think Bill's talking my language, actually. I like that conspiracy theory.
If he was that smart, the Redskins would be better.
Good point.
Well, one thing I was thinking, reading the whole thing and watching it on the NFL Network, you know, we talked about this actually in the 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock hour yesterday, that I had this vibe the whole day as the day went on, hours went by, and the story wasn't coming out, that it felt like the morning show on Apple TV. Like there was some lawyer that was getting involved, or there was some backroom deal to keep somebody's name out of it, because it just kept going and going and nothing moved on the paper until, you know, the middle of afternoon drive. Everybody has left the office. It's right before, like, the newscast didn't have it. The local newscast didn't have it until right at 6 o'clock, didn't have it for 5 o'clock or 4:30. So something, I wonder, maybe something strange happened as far as getting some part of the story pulled or blocked by lawyers. But at any rate, Ian Rappaport gives us some more details on the NFL Network.
A couple other key factors from this article. First of all, neither owner Dan Snyder nor President Bruce Allen were implicated in any of these allegations from the Washington Post. However, there are several former employees who were implicated, who were alleged. First of all, Alex Santos and Richard Mann, the top two personnel executives in the Redskins, both have been fired after these allegations came to light.
And so was the play-by-play guy, Larry Michael, as well, who had been there for 16 years. It was that Santos guy that Rappaport mentioned who was using the phrase quite liberally, ass wagon. You have an ass like a wagon. He would say that to just about anybody or anybody who walked by. Ass wagon.
Right. I had to look that up.
Yeah, that's not a phrase I used. That was not my vernacular when I was single.
I tell girls that their ass looks like a yard cart. That's my go-to.
Not nearly as complimentary.
No.
You are a radio flyer, I'm telling you.
Your ass looks like a hand truck. Your ass looks like a wheelbarrow. Am I doing this right? It's all wrong. Oh, for many reasons. I'll leave.
What? The other news in the NFL wasn't good yesterday either. The latest economic proposal from the NFL to the NFLPA regarding the effects of COVID-19 during the season removes a portion of player salary held in escrow. However, it does call for a cut to each team's player cost. The NFL Network's Tom Pelissero reported Thursday night that the NFL has proposed cutting each team's player cost by $40 million in a salary cap and or benefits for the season. The move replaces a previous proposal that had called for 35% of player salaries to be held in escrow to aid in managing costs. Now, Patrick Mahomes spoke out yesterday in frustration about where things stand in the NFL as far as the financial negotiations go. And this is something we all predicted when we were talking about the haggling going on in baseball, the haggling going on in basketball. There was some in hockey too, but I felt like of the four major sports, the hockey had been the most smooth so far. We're just waiting for it to happen in football, and because of the later calendar, it's just hitting now, and it's making me wonder if they're going to be able to pull this off, or are we going to see something shortened, much like we're seeing in baseball as a result of this latest snag.
Yeah, when you heard the president of the NCAA yesterday say that things weren't looking good for college football, that's bad. With the dispute now, NFL, NFLPA, I kind of thought this was with Major League Baseball originally, Tim. Are they looking for a reason so they don't have to play?
Yeah, I think they are. And in football, especially, like baseball is one thing, and we're going to get into this later on in the 7 o'clock hour, but you know, when you have teams like the Pirates who have young players who want to get to their next contract and want to hit the big money sooner, like they want to be there. I actually think part of the reason why the Pirates might not stink as bad as some people are suggesting is, unlike a lot of the bigger market teams, they're just grinding through this 60-game season for the sake of it. If the Pirates don't get off to a terrible, terrible start, like they might actually have a little enthusiasm surrounding that place. Whereas I think a lot of the higher salary veteran teams are just punching the clock to get through this 60-game season. And I think to that point, Randy, what you bring up in the NFL, there's a lot of guys who just want to get paid but don't want to play. Like, why would you want to beat up your body for one more 16-game season in the NFL if you can get paid anyway and opt out? In fact, I think under the current proposal, again, according to Pelissero, any player who wishes to opt out for 2020 may do so with written notice by August 1st. Now, I don't know to what portion or what percentage of their salary that is, but if you don't want to play and you can get paid in the NFL this year, why not do it and save your body if you're just going to tack one season onto the back end of your contract? But you know, in a cap sport like football, that could turn into a nightmare. Penguins, they had an off day for practice yesterday. Their first game is the 28th versus the Flyers. That's an exhibition game. The Canadian series starts on August the 1st at 8 p.m. on 105.9 The X. Phil Bourque for the Penguins Radio Network was on their team's website speaking with Mike Sullivan, the head coach, yesterday, and they spoke about the lack of fans in the stands, whether or not that would sort of suck the life out of what is normally a very charged playoff atmosphere. Here's what Sullivan said.
You know, it is going to be different, that's for sure. But, my hope is that once the puck drops, there's a lot at stake, and these guys know it. We all know it. And there's an opportunity here to win a Stanley Cup, and we're excited about that opportunity. we also understand how difficult it is. And so regardless of what the circumstance looks like around it, as I said to the guys, when the puck drops, it's hockey.
It's hot. Hot puck.
You got
the t-shirt shops in the Strip District right now. The hot puck. It's still like the glow puck from Fox when they used to have the games.
Yeah.
The little tail on the back of it. And if something's going to make you laugh today from the sports world, I think this is it. Baseball-wise, by the way, the Pirates start their season, preseason, tomorrow against the Cleveland Indians. Joe Musgrove's going to start, and they begin the regular season a week from today in St. Louis. But I had to laugh when I saw this. Alex Rodriguez is among the bidders for a possible purchase of the Mets. Now, that's kind of been known for a while. But the news yesterday was he called for baseball players to accept the type of revenue-sharing system that is tied to his salary cap, and that sparked quick opposition from the union. Of all people, Alex Rodriguez calling for a salary cap. The guy made $448 million during his playing career in Major League Baseball. Of all the players in the world.
Contract that everybody was just like, are you kidding me? And he's like, yep, well, hey, what are you going to do? And so all of a sudden he wants to enter into the realm of ownership and his stance on labor changes. Well, suck a moose, as my dad would say. Which is like one of those sayings that doesn't really mean anything, but it sounds bad. It sounds like something you don't want to have to do.
You know, it reminds me of that Colin Jost joke where he talks about immigration. Like, wherever country you came from, as soon as you get here, you want to, like, shut the door behind you. You're like, all right, let's tighten up now. Now that my people are in, we're done. We're done taking new customers.
Yeah. I got here from Ireland, but you Yugoslavians, you got to stay over there. You right. can't come in here. I made $250 million. Bryce Harper, though, you're making way too much.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Tim. I mean, he had just started to emerge from the PR sort of the persona that everyone had him tagged with. He was becoming likable because he was a good analyst. And he might have been able to go into locker rooms and had people go, hey, A-Rod, but not anymore. He's done. He is persona non grata.
After also, this, I would think so. I thought also he started to scrub his reputation a little bit by being a good boyfriend to J-Lo and appearing on TikTok. Now, that was the most important thing he's done in his life.
That, and he's also been on Shark Tank a whole bunch. And so he's like, you know, starting to be respected in the business. You know, he's an entrepreneur. He's invested in all these different companies, and he's the face of a lot of them. And, I mean, I still think he's... Maybe he misstepped here, but it's not nearly as bad as it could be if he keeps it up.
Well, Bill, he actually needs a salary cap so he can help Mark Cuban buy the O and the Pirates.
Tim Benz filling in for Mike Pursuta this morning at the top of the hour. Val's out today. Susan Copen will be hanging out with us. We're going to talk with Les Carpenter from the Washington Post. Les was one of the contributors to the story, The Blockbuster, about the work environment at Redskins Park. Also, Liz Berlin from Rusted Root, Mr. Smalls. She is fronting an initiative to save independent music across the country, along with an organization called NEVA, Save Our Stages. 90% of independent music venues are slated to fail if things continue on the path that we're on right now. That needs to change, and it can with your help. Liz is going to tell us how at 8:45. And Sean Collier reviewing Fatal Affair, guest of honor, around 7:45. That's on the way.
DVE Morning Show.
News coming from the Walmart corporate offices. They will now require that all Walmart customers.
Walmart.
They are going to have to wear masks. Now, there have been lots of instances where there have been customers who've been asked to put masks on, and they have not been too happy about that leading up to this.
Right.
There have been a lot of anti-maskers at Walmart. So, given the fact that Walmart greeters are generally retirees who are now going to be tasked with not just greeting Walmart shoppers, but also requiring that they are masked up before they go shopping. Well, that's going to require a whole different breed of Walmart greeter, which is why they've released this movie in conjunction with this new corporate-wide mandate. In a world wrecked by a pandemic, Harry Callahan has been transferred from patrolling the streets of San Francisco to the aisles of Walmart.
Callahan, these people are reckless. They're heathens, roaming my store without any facial protection. They need to be stopped, damn it. And you're just the guy for the job.
Welcome to Walmart, punk.
Hi. Clint Eastwood?
And there's only one thing getting between Callahan and unruly shoppers. A mask.
I know what you're thinking. Did I let off 6 coughs or only 5? Well, to tell you the truth, in all this excitement, I kind of lost track myself. But being that this is an N95, the most powerful mask in the world, and would protect everyone from your little cough, you gotta ask yourself one question. Do you feel healthy? Well, do you, punk?
No!
Put it on.
Hey, Chief, you got Isley's in here? I can't find none.
It's quite a list you got there, cowboy.
Yeah, you gotta stock up for the week, you know what I mean?
Looks to me like you're forgetting something.
Huh? No, guys, why'd you do that for? You crumpled up my list. I gotta read that. Oh, is it because I ain't wearing no mask? It's cool, dude. I ain't sick or nothing. You know, you look real familiar.
Oh, yeah? Well, does this taste familiar? Cover your face, you son of a bitch.
You can't assign Harry Callahan to any case. You just let him loose.
Go ahead. Make my day.
What do you mean?
It means basically like you'd make my day because I could beat you up and I really enjoy doing that. And you'd make my day if you didn't wear it. But now that you're wearing a mask, I didn't really need to say. You know what? Enjoy shopping at Walmart. Thanks for coming.
Clint Eastwood is COVID Harry. Streaming on Hulu Minus this. Mitch Mitchell on drums with the Jimi Hendrix Experience. And it would have been his birthday last week. He died in 2008 in Portland, Oregon. Manic depression there. It's the DV Morning Show. Val's on vacation today. Well, she's got the day off. I wouldn't say it's a vacation. But Susan Cope is filling in with your news or whatever at the top of the hour. Sean Collier with a couple of movie reviews for you. Also, we've got Liz Berlin from Mr. Small's Theater. And you know her from Rusted Root and her many different musical endeavors. She is helping to push the initiative to save independent music stages across the country. 90% of independent music venues are slated to fail if we don't act now, and you can help keep independent music alive. It is crucial. And I know everybody listening to this right now loves going to see live music. So there's an easy way you can help, and Liz is going to discuss that with us coming up at 8:45. Not to mention, we've got, was that you, Bill? Are you dinging, Bill?
What, dinging? Yeah.
Yeah. Do we have a talk about the dinging the other day? Do you love the dinging?
What were you saying? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you over all the dinging.
We were trying to record the other day, and Bill's going, ding, ding. And he goes, what do you want me to do about it? And I said, turn off the ding, you know. it's a simple request. Easy. What am I supposed to do about this? You could turn
I'm closing
off.
Out the dings. All right, no more dings. That's the last thing you'll hear off. From me this morning. I
Les
just got another
Carpenter.
Message. You didn't hear a ding, did you? Nope.
That's great. Well, if you tell us when you got a message, there might as well be a ding. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to alert us,
got a message.
That's worse than the ding.
Got a message.
Les Carpenter from the Washington Post. He was he's a writer for the Washington Post. He helped craft the bombshell article yesterday that described the workplace in Washington at the Redskins facility as something right out of Mad Men. And it's kind of, it wasn't as bad as the preliminary discussion online made it out to be. But yes, that's not to say it's not bad, because it is. And we'll talk with Les Carpenter about that coming up at 9:15. Susan's next.
Pittsburgh.
We ran into another set of parents of my daughter's friends, and we're just kind of talking and be like, yeah, how crazy has this been? They're like, I know, it's been so crazy. And I'm like, have you guys been quarantining? And they're like, no, not at all. And then it was immediately like, how do I get out of this conversation? Like, now I'm trapped. And I was way too close to them at the time. And I was like, you haven't? No, it's all right. We're just going to... We'll talk to you guys later. Have a good rest of your summer.
Randy Brown and the DVE Morning Show.
Susan Copen is hanging out with us this morning. She's filling in for Val, and it's always good to talk with you. Hi, Susan. How are you?
Good morning. I'm back so soon. You guys are awesome. I thought it'd be like a couple years before you allowed me back.
No, don't you understand? This is proof that nobody wants to do this. Like, we need you to want to do this. So, so you got your salty dog hat on right now.
Yes, is that, I do.
That's in Jersey, right?
Anyone from Pittsburgh knows where the salty dog is. It's like mini Pittsburgh in Hilton Head.
There are
Yinzers everywhere in Hilton Head. Terrible towel, beach towels, you name it.
Isn't that funny that, like, Pittsburgh, their idea of a vacation is going somewhere else, but surrounding themselves with people and artifacts from Pittsburgh. Like, if you go to San Francisco with a bunch of people from Pittsburgh, they're like, hey, we got to go to that place on Columbus, right? You know, the Pittsburgh place. We just left Pittsburgh, the real one. Well, we got to go to the next best thing, though.
Well, Randy, I mean, you kind of said it in our off-air conversation. It's about the people. Obviously, you want to change in location. You want to put all these Yinzers in a more beautiful setting, and you get to do that for a week.
Yeah. Well, the Steeler bars around the country are a phenomenon, so that's almost a different thing. I understand going and celebrating the team and being somewhere else, but, like, it's funny to me when you go to the beach and it's not football season and you have to go to the place that has terrible towels hanging, and you just feel so good. Like, there is something, I'm sure. We were talking about kids and uniformality and how they look forward to a routine because it makes them feel more secure. I mean, Pittsburghers need their whoobie. They got to have their whoopee, and that is, they see that terrible towel, and mentally they can just wrap themselves in it, and they feel warm and safe.
Well, there's in Hilton Head, there's a pizza shop where the guy is from Pittsburgh, and so that's where we go. We order our pizzas from there.
Yeah.
Of course.
And they're always like, now more than ever, they can keep a foot or a toehold in Pittsburgh and be somewhere else because of the internet. Like, you could watch... Pittsburgh television and watch, you know, Pomp doing a post game after a Steelers game. You know, you can watch that, the countdown he does. You can listen to DVE. You can constantly feel like you're in the know of what's going on in Pittsburgh easier than you used to be. So for all of the people who fled down south and all the, not just snowbirds, but people who just relocated, they can really feel like they're getting a Pittsburgh experience, Bill.
I have a Heinz Ward jersey that doesn't quite fit me anymore. That's basically my Thunder shirt. And then we go on our vacation and we go to Deep Creek. And the person that was fixing our air conditioner last year was like, your voice sounds familiar. And I was like, oh my God, because they get DVE down there.
And
it was
just,
it was so bizarre. My mom like loved it. She was like, tell you what, you hook us up here. I'm like, Mom, can you not work side deals with the air conditioned guy, please?
The amount of times I've like had fun with the whole Pittsburgh is everywhere thing. My girlfriend years ago, like, used to make fun of me constantly for that. Because I would always be like, I bet we see a Pittsburgh hat or somebody from Pittsburgh, you know, in an hour, wherever we were in a new location. So we'd gone skiing one time. My college roommate lives out in Telluride, which is, it's tough to get to Telluride. So we go out and visit him and we're hanging there. And like a whole day goes by where it's like, you know, one of the last runs and we're on a gondola and she goes, haven't seen one Pittsburgh anything all day long. And I'm like, oh, give it time. Give it time. And she's like, you know, just good naturedly ribbing me and everything. And we're kind of like laughing and didn't really think much of it. And then were waiting to take off, and then a group gets on and a guy's wearing a Steelers hat, and I was so happy, and I just looked at her, and then we start going, I look at the guy, I go, where are you from? And the guy goes, Somerset. And I go, like, I love it. It happens every time. No matter where you go, Pittsburgh finds you.
Dude, I was the first USO tour we did. We get to Kuwait City. We're staying in a Radisson hotel. We're on the tip of the Persian Gulf. We look out. We're like, oh, my God, we're strangers in a strange land. We come inside. We get in the elevator. And this guy, and Steve always wears a penguin hat, so he has like a Pens hat on. And the guy in the elevator goes, let's go Pens. And we all just die. And I'm like, where are you from, dude? And he goes, Altoona. I mean, it was like, what the hell are you doing over here?
I mean, it's exclusive to Pittsburgh, though. It's not like if you're from Oakland and you go somewhere and you see somebody in an A's hat that all of a sudden there's a party and you start asking, hey, where do you live? Who do you know? Like, right. When they sent us to cover the Olympics in 2000 in Sydney, Australia, I'm sitting there like having a Coke in the morning or whatever, waiting to do whatever we had to do. And there's a marching band playing and we're in the square underneath the Sydney Harbour Bridge. And it's all Olympic coordinated activity. And somebody gets on a loudspeaker and they go, that was the Mercyhurst Prep School marching band from Erie, Pennsylvania, United States. And I'm like, my sisters went to Mercyhurst High School. I grew up in Erie, Pennsylvania. What are the chances that's crazy? And I run over to the and I go, guys, hey, I'm from Erie. And they went, yeah. And I'm like, that's it. And they're like, well, and I'm like, and unless we're on the moon, we couldn't be any further away from Erie, Pennsylvania than we are right now. It's like the furthest place on the earth. And they were like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm like, screw you people. I'm going to look for a terrible towel. Because if you run into someone from Pittsburgh, it's 5 minutes, Susan.
Jim and I were skiing in Switzerland. It was years and years and years ago. And it's a full blizzard. Can't see anything. And all the trails there are marked with a number, not like a name. And so we come upon, we're at the top of the mountain. We come upon this sign that says, like, you know, stop, caution, hazard, don't go any farther. And we ski up to it to read the sign. And right there is a Steelers sticker. So of course, all we want is our picture taken with the sign and the Steelers sticker, full blizzard, and people skiing by are like, why are you getting your picture taken with a sticker? I'm like, it's the Steelers. We're in Switzerland on the top of a mountain.
Exactly. This is fate. When they had WOW Airlines doing direct flights from Pittsburgh to Reykjavik in Iceland, and every Pittsburgher who wanted to do it was taking that track. I did it one time. I saw like pirate hats, Steeler hats everywhere. And then I ran into somebody at a show back here on the north side. They're like, hey, I passed you in Iceland a few weeks ago. So like they were probably glad they shut that flight down because there would have been Steeler stickers all over the ring road going around Iceland. So that's probably a good thing that stopped. But Florida, I don't think it's a big deal. There's so many Pittsburghers, you know, you're going to run into them. North Carolina, I think there's a lot of Pittsburghers too. But when you're somewhere where you're not expecting it and you run into that, the emblem, the colors, Bill, there's just something, I don't know what it is. It's comforting.
I lived in LA for a little while, not actually in LA, in Sherman Oaks. And I walked into a random Irish pub and I walk in, I give the guy my ID and he's like, oh, there's a guy at the end of the bar that's from Pennsylvania, you should go talk to him. And I'm like, okay. So we go down, I go down to the end of the bar and I'm like, I heard you're from Pennsylvania, where are you from? And he goes, Pittsburgh. And I said, what neighborhood? And he goes, Greenfield. And I'm like, oh my God, what street? And he's like, Lydia. I'm like, my grandparents grew up on Lydia Street, my parents grew up on Lydia Street. And he goes, you know Freddie Busey? I'm like, know him. He's my first girlfriend's uncle. How do you know him? And it was just that's like
a Pittsburgh connection.
We went all the way to the street. Like, It was just, it was insane. That's probably the closest I've ever zeroed in. Like, you know, usually you say, where are you from in Pittsburgh? And they do the Somerset, or they go, yeah, I'm from Ligonier, you know?
Bill, I thought you were going to be like, Greenfield, no way. My grandparents live there. Lydia Street. And he's like, yeah, I'm your cousin, dude. I came here with you. How effed up are you right now? We traveled together.
Insane.
Susan Copen, anything, any news of note we should be addressing here this morning?
Beware of Cozy Bear. Russian hackers are trying to steal coronavirus vaccine research. That is according to U.S., British, and Canadian officials. Though it's not clear if any data was compromised, Cozy Bear is the name of the group behind the attacks. 15 former female employees with the Washington Redskins have accused staff of sexual harassment. The Washington Post reports the women face comments about their body, sexual advances, and were told to dress provocatively. The Washington, D.C. team is also undergoing a name change.
So first off, the Cozy Bear thing, the Russians hacking, looking for the coronavirus cure. I mean, really, the Russians are the people in your class. Look, we've studied for the test, okay? And, you know, maybe we'll give you one or two answers, but just let us get done with the test first, okay? Just relax back there, cheaters. The Washington Post story, Tim Benz had mentioned this earlier, that it did remind him of the Apple TV show, The Morning Show, with Steve Carell, which sort of resembles the Matt Lauer situation at the Today Show, which we talked with you about when you were on the show, Susan, a couple of weeks ago, and how in that story, and I'm not, I don't know how much it resembled real life, but basically the network executives and lawyers worked with the newspaper to kill the more damning story. And then they ran with another equally sensational story, not equal, but another sensational story that wasn't quite as brutal to the show and the reputation of the network. A, I'm wondering if that something like that didn't happen here because of how bad the speculation was for what we were going to hear. Not that it wasn't terrible, what was described in that piece that 15 women have come forward and described. Basically, they worked in Mad Men. You know, the TV show, it was just sexual harassment nonstop, which is not okay. But we were led to believe that Daniel Snyder was going to be led off in handcuffs when this story finally broke. A, is it possible that something like that happened where a little bit of, hey, we'll give you this story instead of this one happened? And B, have you ever heard of that happening in your time, either on doing the CBS morning show or anything like that locally? That doesn't seem to me to be something that is prevalent or frequently happens.
What was your question?
Is there stories that get killed because lawyers and corporate execs come forward and say, don't run with that story, we have another juicy one for you, if you run with this one, you know, we'll be better off for it and you'll continue to get information from us. So instead of you having one whopper, we'll keep feeding you more stories.
In my 25 years of broadcasting, I've never, ever encountered that. But, you know, who knows what's going on? But no, I've never encountered that.
Well, Randy, I was telling you, I just finished that Epstein docuseries. And there's a clear example of that in the first profile that they did on him for Vanity Fair. He was basically pals with the editor in chief and had that whole segment of the article and the profile completely edited out. So when it came out, it was just, who is this man of mystery? He's got a lot of money and he's moving a lot of things around. He's a mover and a shaker and all this, and none of the sexual misconduct stuff that two people were already on the record as coming out and saying against him.
I'd imagine in that scenario, that stuff happens a lot with the organization. It's strange. I think that the internet just ran wild with it. I'm not so sure that it's possible that the Washington Post would have had any love for Daniel Snyder to help him in this scenario. But the sexual harassment aspect of it, did you read the article, Susan?
I didn't read the full article. No, I just was skimming it this morning.
I mean, it's basically just these poor women were constantly, it was like they were working in a fraternity house.
Yes. And they were the butt of constant jokes and stuff like that. And in this day and age, it's remarkable that nobody said, hey, guys, you can't do this.
Yeah, I had a friend who worked in a sports related business, and she was one of just a few women who worked there. And she said it was pretty brutal. I won't say exactly where she worked, but she eventually left because she said it's so hard. If you're in a male dominated business that revolved around sports, this is what she told me. That it was just really hard to survive. If you were a female.
Especially if you're a reporter. Yeah, and especially if you were a reporter, I think that, like, because if you were a female reporting on sports through the years, I mean, there's plenty of cases documented of female reporters being harassed. That's just got to be the toughest environment to keep your head about you and not be completely frustrated because, you know, it was like an old boys club that was there forever, and change has been pretty slow. I'm sure things are a lot better than they used to be back in, like, was it 1985 when the Patriots got sued by the one woman? But, like, it sounds like Daniel Snyder's environment there in Washington was a throwback to the 1950s.
Yeah. Yeah. And the crazy thing is, for some reason, in all work environments, like, it is somehow acceptable for men to look like slobs and to make constant inappropriate comments to females. And,
yeah,
you know, whether, like, explicitly enticed or just, you know, sort of suggested, they're made to feel like they have to wear a certain type of clothes, or, you know, like, how many times in that article did these women say, you know, it was suggested to them that they might want to wear tighter things so that they could close sales deals.
Yeah. Wouldn't it have been great if one of those women would have just finally been like, here's an idea. How about you shave your nose hair, tuck your shirt in, and clean the mustard stain off your tie?
Right.
Susan, what else you got?
Let's see. Jeopardy host Alex Trebek says that he is feeling good and cancer treatments are paying off. He announced that he had stage 4 pancreatic cancer back in 2019. He has now written a book called The Answer Is: Reflections on My Life, and that will be released on July 21st. And Howie Mandel had to make a video assuring fans that he has not been kidnapped. People thought he was trying to send a secret SOS message on TikTok. And so he had to send out a message to fans saying, no, that's not the case. And even my own children came to me the other day to let me know that Howie had been kidnapped and he needed help. And I said, no, honey, I don't think Howie Mandel has been kidnapped. I am giving out a secret SOS and no one has come to my rescue. Howie, I think, is fine.
It's remarkable.
Someone,
to me,
please respond to my SOS.
How did Howie Mandel make himself culturally relevant this many years later? I mean, as a kid, I remember watching his stand up and he was so goofy and I liked him when I was in grade school. And somehow your kids know who Howie Mandel is. That is remarkable to me.
He really is
a social media genius. He is a crazy social media person. So yeah. Once you get on TikTok, you know, anyone under the age of 18 knows exactly who you are.
Yeah. Are you on TikTok, Susan? Are you a TikToker?
I am not. No, I'm not.
I've seen you dance with your kids on social media, though.
I have posted me dancing. Listen, when that when an 80s song comes on, and that song was The Weeknd. I was dancing to his song. Yeah. It sounds like it's right out of the 80s. You just got to get those moves on. So, and my little guy, he likes to dance with me, so I'll take it.
Nice. Some of my friends and I are getting together and watching Live Aid this weekend. Do you remember watching Live Aid when you were a kid?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amazing.
So, like, the English stage, like, the clothes from 80s rock stars are absolutely hilarious. It's like they got them from a circus, like the Thompson twins wardrobe. what those guys would wear. And we were little kids watching MTV all day. We're like, this is what rock stars do. They dress like Howard Jones. It is. And they're like, how did you go to like Kogo's and get like, something to drink or get a pack of smokes? And your hair is like 5 feet tall, Bill.
Did we talk about this? Like a whole TV show could have just been Prince going to the grocery store, where just like in crushed velvet something, like in, you know, high heels, basically.
Prince always looked to me like, as athletic as he was when he wore those big heels, he walked like the front half of a show pony.
Yes.
Susan filling in for Val this morning. Always good to talk with you, Susan. Susan Copen, she'll be hanging out here. Tim Benz filling in for Mike Pursuta. When we come back, Sean Collier will be joining us. Also, Les Carpenter from the Washington Post, one of the contributors of that story, which would, if not for the, I think the buildup killed it, Bill. It would have been really, really damaging. I think this is going to hurt his reputation even further. But this is not, he has to sell the team bad. And that is not to say it's not bad. It's just that the internet ginned up this expectation of he's going to be dragged away to a gulag. And that's not going to happen for Daniel Snyder. More on that coming up. Tim Benz will be doing your sports when we return.
Calm.
DVE Sports.
All right, Pursuit is off this week. Tim Benz has been filling in with your sports here on the DV Morning Show. What's up, man?
All right, we'll begin courtesy of Bridgeville Appliance with the Pirates as they are preparing to play the Indians in an exhibition game tomorrow night. Joe Musgrove to start. They start the season officially a week from today in St. Louis. And we spent a little time in the 6 o'clock hour pontificating about whether or not the short season will help the Pirates and why it might help the Pirates. I wrote about that today for Breakfast with Benz and the Trib. And my theory, and yes, it is just very much a working theory, is that, look, yeah, it's a 60-game season. So this might be the first time where we've been 100% serious when we say, you know what, they could be eliminated within the first month of the season. Theoretically, that could happen if they're that bad out of the gate. But my belief is, in part, because they're actually a roster. There is some character and personality and charm about a lot of the guys on the roster. Like, Cole Tucker's a fun guy. You know, Shelton's injected a little enthusiasm into the team. Trevor Williams is a fun guy. Brault, Musgrove. There is some energy. Bell certainly is, the first baseman. So, you know, I think they've got some good guys on the team, and that might sustain them through a bumpy start. And I really do think they want to be there as opposed to some other high-profile, big payroll teams that if they get off to a bad start, they could tank and tank hard and really not care about this. The Pirates players are actually trying to play for the future for next year, and that's a good thing. I talked to Ben Cherington, the general manager, about that this week, and this is what he had to say.
I've always felt like, you know, the most important opinion in the ballpark is the one that from the guys wearing the uniforms as far as what their expectations are walking on the field every night. And it feels like this group likes to be with each other, likes to practice with each other, likes to play and prepare with each other. They like being here. It's a strange time. There's a lot that these guys have to go through just to get on the field every day. And I haven't heard a bit of complaining about it. So I think that's probably a good signal for us.
You know, I think Cherington's a good guy to use barometer there after being with a big market team in Boston. Like, do you think that the $20 million players that were left, right in every direction in that locker room be okay with the protocols and the grind of coming to the park every day and getting a cotton swab shoved up your nose and your temperature taken and not being able to spit seeds? And, you know, these guys are just willing to listen because they just want to be here and play. Like, I actually think they did want to report. And manager Derek Shelton also spoke to that angle and how it might behoove the Pirates moving forward.
They do gel and they do get along, and, you know, they're going to spend a lot of time together. They can't go anywhere. You know, you're in a bubble of some, so to speak, and especially when you're on the road and you're in hotel rooms, and, you know, We don't want them going out to a lot of places. So the fact that they get along and they gel, I think that's going to be very beneficial to us.
I think you guys know I'm usually the last to pin my hopes on the intangibles here. I'm pretty skeptical when it comes to that kind of stuff. And they are indescribably there's no way you can look at this roster and say it's a better roster than last year. Not at all.
No.
I mean, obviously, they've trimmed what little fat they had. You can't even say what they had last year was fat. You know, they were not good last year, and they took some good players off of it. So it's not a better roster, but the compact nature of the season might help them stay relevant longer in it as compared to everybody else.
I'd make a food analogy to this. It was as if the Pirates were a restaurant, and it kept getting worse and worse. And you were like, you know what? I'm not even going to eat there anymore. And then the pandemic hit, and it was like, now you're starving, and the restaurant is like, hey, we'll wrap you some burritos to go made out of whatever we got in the fridge. And you're like, I am so in. You know what? I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to love that burrito. I don't care what you put in it.
That chicken salad that gave me diarrhea every single day, I want five of those today. Give me five of those.
Exactly. So, I mean, expectations are lowered because, look, the best thing that happened to Bob Nutting was the world paying attention to everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know what? If you look at the over-under right now, they are 25.5. That's what I saw on Fox Bet, the app, yesterday. 25.5 for win total. You think that's way under, Randy? I think it's a little under.
Out of 60?
A little under. Yeah. Because if you think of it, winning percentage-wise, they were a 426 team last year. 24 wins is 421. 25 wins is 433. Yeah. So it's almost exactly where they were win percentage-wise a season ago.
It's more fun to root for them and bet that they're going to go over. And I like the point that you made about they can feed off their own limited success, because any success is going to be seen as a huge step forward. Whereas the teams that are loaded, it's expectation. They don't have the expectation on the north side. They're hoping they can rally together in these hard times and use this as the impetus to actually get something done right now.
Well, you guys are talking right before the commercial break about the Washington Redskins story. And one thing we didn't get to yesterday when we were talking about that, as we continue to surf through the details, there has not been a comment yet from the NFL on it specifically, nor has there been one from Dan Snyder. We talked a little bit about Santos. He was one of the guys who was fired yesterday, Alex Santos. And he was the ass wagon guy. We did not get to stapler in my pocket guy. They actually, some guy actually used the line, "It's not a stapler in my pocket. I'm just happy to see you." Like, actually used that line from, I believe, 1974.
Who puts a stapler in their pocket?
I don't know. The guy from Office Space? Have you seen my stapler?
Oh, that's a creepy way to expose yourself in the workplace.
Do you want to see my stapler?
Everything about that story was abhorrent, but it's not enough to get Daniel Snyder thrown out of the league. It's not terrible, close. And it should not be tolerated. And the guy, that head of scouting guy, I'm sure there's tons of creeps across the NFL. But if you don't have the wherewithal to know that you should not be propositioning people within the organization to the degree, extent, and frequency that he did, you don't belong in corporate culture at all.
I think the reason that we're having the reaction that we're having is because all day yesterday before the story dropped, everybody's talking about how Daniel Snyder is going down, and then this story breaks. He's not directly implicated in any of the harassment, and all the guys that are gone. Like the right. Dennis Green guy, the Santos, all the people,
play-by-play guy
that are accused directly are no longer with the organization.
And yeah, so and remember,
I think why we're having the reaction. Like, obviously, it's a toxic work environment and needs to be addressed, but it's not implicating Daniel Snyder directly. And that's the
big thing. Disconnect. It's a huge thing. You're 100% right, because that's what I was seeing on Twitter yesterday, is a lot of people getting upset. Well, you guys have to take this more seriously. It's still serious charges and accusations. Well, nobody's saying anything different. I agree with that, but Like, you can't compare this to Donald Sterling. Donald Sterling was on tape making racist allegations. Jerry Richardson was directly the one implicated in making the racist claims. Like, Daniel Snyder was not implicated. Bruce Allen was not implicated. None of the players were implicated. None of the coaching staff was directly implicated in any of this. Now, was some of that potentially in the story that didn't get in the story in the last minute, and that's why the salacious details were kind of leaking out? Yeah, potentially. But that we might not know until, well, 9:15 when we get our guest on to talk about it.
One of the most bizarre and super specific things that was speculated before the story dropped was that Jay Gruden was having like these sex parties, and he was have him and the running back were having like an affair with the same girl, and then he found out about it, got pissed, benched him, and then the backup running back missed a block that had Alex Smith's leg almost torn off. And I was just like, how do you speculate that? Like, that is a very specific sequence of events.
Right, exactly. This is one of those stories where every fan, like if this had been a Steelers story, every Steeler fan, every gripe that they called into Stan and Charlie for the postgame show, they would have been able to create their own answer as to why some guy wasn't getting playing time, or why a play was not called for a specific player. Oh, that had to be why. Exactly to the point that you're bringing up, Bill, because there was some sort of seedy underbelly to all of this. But there's just not as much pinning on the front office as I think people wanted, especially since Snyder's such a bad guy inherently. A couple other things. The Penguins had a day off yesterday from practice. Their first game is the 28th versus the Flyers. That's an exhibition game. The Canadian series starts on August the 1st at 8 p.m. on 105.9 The X. Tony Finau is leading the way at the Memorial. And the big story coming out from that golf tournament, apparently Bryson DeChambeau had a 423-yard drive in Dublin yesterday. I get tired if I walk that far. So,
Tim Benz filling in for Mike Pursuta with your sports this morning. Susan Copen has your news, top of the hour. Sean Collier reviewing some stuff when we come back. Randy Bauman in the DVE Morning Show, hanging out with Bill Crawford this morning and joined by our buddy Sean Collier with a couple of movie reviews. Sean, what's going on?
Hanging in there, watching movies. How are you?
Good. Doing the same.
Yeah, same
hanging
thing.
Hanging in there, watching movies, watching TV shows, trying to stay busy. Although I keep thinking I'm going to be watching a ton when the weather gets bad, so to try and get outside, but I still always feel compelled to park my butt down and watch dumb stuff. And I liked Palm Springs a whole lot. I thought that was a great one to watch. And because it was like not too heavy. It was kind of, you know, it had a little bit of a cool message and a cool play on the Groundhog Day premise, which there's been a few of those this year with Russian Doll in Palm Springs now, which I guess is just acceptable to just kind of lift a premise now.
Yeah, it's a genre. It's good.
Right. It's a genre. Right.
Groundhog Day is its own genre. I'm with you. I'm trying to find things that are nice and fun and light. This week, you know, we always talk about all of this stuff that I've never seen. Here's one I didn't see until this week: Smokey and the Bandit. And man, did that hit the spot!
Oh, dude, it's one of the all-time greats. I mean,
oh yeah,
classic. I know every line of that movie. Thank you, nice lady.
I couldn't believe I missed it till now. And, you know, coming out of this difficult time, I'm not saying I'm going to become a trucker, but it's way more likely now than it was before I saw Smokey and the Bandit.
If you never saw Smokey and the Bandit, it would be easy to never forgive Burt Reynolds or never, like, think he was much of anything. If you like, that really shows his comedic ability and just his smarts as a, you know, as a collaborator with Hal Needham. Those movies, you wanted to be in them. You wanted to, like, be around those people. They were a blast.
Oh, there's so much fun. You know, until I saw this, there's that famous thing that originally they wanted Burt Reynolds to be Indiana Jones. And I never understood that until I saw Smokey and the Bandit. Now I'm seeing him here and go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. I can see it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was such a big movie star then, though. I mean, he was in romantic comedies, you know, Semi-Tough was another big one that he was in with Jill Clayburgh and Kris Kristofferson. And he's like the the guy you root for. Somehow he was able to do everything, action movies, love interests, in a way that not a lot of people did, and comedies. Like, he really...
Comedies. Cannonball Run.
Oh, Cannonball Run's just... as dumb as you want to think it is, it's so great. And don't we need that now more than ever, Sean?
Oh, we absolutely do. And that's transitions nicely into one I'll recommend for this week, a new one, more in the thriller vein, but the same kind of quick hit, you know what you're getting. There are times when you want a great movie. There are other times when you want to sit on the couch and scream out loud at your television to try and help a nice lady not get murdered. That is exactly what you're getting with Fatal Affair on Netflix. The title says it all. There's going to be an affair. Someone is going to murder someone as a result of that affair. The people in this case it will be fatal. It's the only other thing that could be. That could be a Steven Seagal movie, but it's not. It's a you know, domestic thriller. The principals here is a successful lawyer played by Niall Long and an elite computer hacker played by Omar Epps. Or, of course, he could be played by Mike Tomlin. There's no way of knowing for sure. They knew each other in college. They reconnect. Things happen. She needs to keep those things a secret from her husband and daughter. But, uh-oh, he's a little on the unstable side. This is a development that everyone except the main character saw coming from the first moment of the movie. To be clear, yes, this movie is dumb. The script especially is dumb. We go with Omar Epps to therapy at one point, and the therapist says, "So, do you remember when you first came to see me for your court-ordered anger management? What was the rest of that line? Are there any other elements of your backstory that I could say out loud for all of the people at home?" But that said, there is definitely a place for this kind of movie, particularly on Netflix. Like I said, sometimes you don't want a movie that you're going to have to think about or pay attention to or even look at all that much. Sometimes you kind of just want to fall asleep on the couch every now and then, wake up and yell, "Don't let him in the house. You know how he is."
All right. Tell us about Guest of Honor.
Yeah, Guest of Honor, something completely different. More of a movie nerd kind of a drama with David Thewlis, whose name you probably don't know and I probably cannot pronounce, but you know who he is. He was the bad guy in Wonder Woman. He was in all of the Harry Potters. It's a twisty story. He's trying to figure out why his daughter is in jail. We're looking at, you know, what went wrong with his marriage. It's told mostly in these flashback scenes where his daughter is talking to a priest played by Luke Wilson. That was a surprise because I thought Luke Wilson just vanished in a puff of smoke sometime around 2008.
Yeah. No. They're all around, all the Wilsons.
All the Wilsons, all of the whole Royal Tenenbaums cast is just sticking in there somewhere.
You know, my favorite thing about the Wilsons brothers, Sean, is the Wilson brothers always find a way to put the Shemp Wilson in every one of their movies. That the third Wilson brother, you know who I'm talking about? He's like Cooper, the personal trainer dude. He's like, yeah, he's like a jacked up. He's in every one of their movies for like one line. All the time.
Hey,
and I like that they always manage to find a space for that dude because, you know, that's what brothers do.
I don't know if that loyalty is paying off so much anymore. The Wilson stock is in the basement as of, you know, about the time that the Ben Stiller stock went down.
Yeah. Yeah, which is crazy to say. Hey, by the way, I took your advice and mindlessly turned on The Floor is Lava.
Oh, yeah.
And I have to say, it was very satisfying to watch people smash their faces in. Like, that was, it was fun to watch people jump, miss, and smash their heads. Like, it was somehow cathartic.
The key discovery on that show is that everyone thinks they're better at jumping than they actually are. Wherever you are, you know, I mean, you could be on the sidewalk and you're thinking, I could probably jump over to that thing if I tried. You can't. And The Floor is Lava is just proving that point over and over and over again.
Okay, I cut you short on Guest of Honor, but we're short for time. So Guest of Honor, thumbs up or thumbs down? Is it a good one? Is it not so good?
It's a good one. Eh. More for movie nerds, film nerds. It's an art house thing. But if that's your thing, you're going to enjoy it.
And Fatal Affair, mindless, exactly. Like Fatal Affair, I know exactly what I'm getting by the title.
If you, about 10 p.m., mm-hmm. you're a couple glasses of wine in, you want to nod off to something, Fatal Affair is your movie.
Again, Sean Collier, never going to get a blurb. Thanks so much, man. No. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. When Thanks, we come Sean. Back, Susan Copen filling in for Val, DVE.
Pittsburgh.
Busy weekend for air travel. People are starting to feel more comfortable. TSA security saying 587,000 travelers on Friday, 507,000 on Saturday, 590,000 on Sunday. They might go over 600,000 this week, which I would imagine would be the first time since March. So people feel a little more comfortable with getting in the plane and taking off.
You there
My
yet?
Brother's a commercial pilot. He flies for a big airline. He's been flying through all of this. It's really been interesting to talk to him.
Does your brother have to wear a mask while he flies? Like once they get in the cockpit, they're like, all right, we're good.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't even ask him. I don't know.
I would think you wouldn't want anything to impede your communication with the co-pilot.
Right.
Okay, turn left.
Randy Bauman and the DVE Morning Show.
Susan Copen's hanging with us this morning, filling in for Val. Hey, it's time for the Wright Auto Deal of the Day. If you're a Corvette fan, this one's for you. Today's DVE Auto Deal from Wright Hyundai is a collector's dream. A 1991 Bill, smoking hot ZR1 Corvette in Arrest Me Red.
In Take Me to Jail Now Red.
How many of us have dreamed of driving one of these? This was the top of the line performance car in 1991. It's still a great performance muscle car today. Classic two-door coupe hatchback with removable fiberglass roof and black leather bucket seats. It's in mint condition, only 19,657 miles on it. It was priced at $39,999. It's marked down dramatically to just $31,300. You won't find this anywhere else. This 1991 ZR1 Corvette is one that you're going to want to collect and drive. It's featured online as the DVE Auto Deal of the Day at WrightHyundai.com. You can visit their showroom, too, and check it out, Perry Highway in Wexford. We'll have more great auto deals for you next week from Wright Hyundai. I bet that's gone by 5 o'clock today. At that price, yeah. I bet that's
especially because it's I'm ready to do hard time red.
That's right.
That's one of my favorite colors.
Coveted color, yeah. Susan Copen filling in for Val. She's got your news now on DVE. What's going on, Susan?
Good morning. Hey, I have some good news for you guys. I remember I told you my mom was making masks, this little old Italian lady with her sewing machine in the dining room. Yeah. I told her that you wanted a mask, and she goes, oh, I'll do that. Of course I'll send him a mask. Yeah, so you have masks coming. Made by my mom on her sewing machine in her dining room.
That's amazing.
Are they like colors of the Italian flag? Well, can I wear it to Bloomfield's Little Italy days?
You could. She'll custom make it. She tried to stick to primary colors. So she's got blue and white. I said, Mom, who are you making masks for? Anybody who wants one. If the firefighters want one in town, I'll make it for them.
You should just talk as your mom the whole newscast. Let's have your mom on the show. Can we call her, Joe?
I have to.
No,
I won't.
Joe's like, no, I'm sorry.
No, we can't call her.
I want a mask, and I want it in couch print. Like, I want it in grandma couch print, just a mosaic of
flowers. Oh, I have fabric for that. I have fabric. If you want some sort of paisley, you want orange? You want orange?
Orange.
And the best part is my dad is straight off the boat from Germany. And so to listen to the two of them talk, my brother and I just howl. Because he's like, Your mother is making masks. And then my mom's like, I'm making masks for everybody who wants one. The lady down the street with the dog, we walked for coffee, and then she wanted a mask, so I made her one.
So your parents dad came over here like on the boat, and he met your mom here.
Yes.
And your mom's originally from?
She's from Jersey. She's 100% Italian. He's 100% German off the boat.
She North Jersey?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she, he came here with 200 borrowed dollars and a suitcase, and that's it.
Get out of here. Awesome story.
And he tells the story. His whole backstory is just fascinating. And he's so humble and doesn't like to talk about it. But he was a refugee during World War II. He was just a little kid and forced to flee his home. And they would steal food from farmers' fields. So, like, to this day, he won't eat pumpkin. He's like, oh, I had to steal so many pumpkins as a kid to eat. And
So
he came to the United States in his 20s, but he took a boat and he was on the boat at the near the Verrazano Bridge in New York City. And he just was staring at New York City. He's like, tomorrow I will be in America. And then he eventually met my mom and the rest is history.
Wow.
That's awesome. Does he hate Halloween?
No. Why? Because of the pumpkins?
Pumpkins, yeah.
No. He doesn't hate Halloween,
Interesting side note. They recently changed the spelling of the Verrazano Bridge because they had it wrong. They misspelled it. It was named after the explorer, and they spelled it wrong. Yeah, so they recently corrected that. That is an amazing story about your parents, and to me, that's like one of those, that's what makes America great stories that can never happen again. But it was so much a part of what I grew up as understanding. Oh my God, $200. So what did your dad eventually do professionally? Like, what did he do for a job?
He's a doctor. He's a neurologist, and he works at the VA hospital in Albany, and he's still working to this day. He's 80 and he still goes to work every day.
Wow. Oh my Lord. So he went to medical school when he got here, obviously.
He went to medical school in Germany and then he came to the US he landed in New York City, but then was placed in a hospital in New Jersey where he met my mom and did training in the United States. And then eventually they went to Chicago and then ended up in Albany, New York, where they have been for most of their lives.
So we can give your mom a phone number. Would she call it and come on the air with us? Do you think?
What time is it? I don't even know if she would be awake at this hour.
8:15. Oh, God bless her. If she's sleeping in this late at that age, that's awesome.
She likes to sleep. Though the last time I talked to them, I've got the shingles. Oh, it hurts. It hurts. And your daddy's got Lyme disease. And your dad's got Lyme disease and I've got shingles.
We're sick, but we're going to go to Vegas.
I'm like, you're not going to Vegas.
They are.
No, you're not going to. What are you going to Vegas for? You've never gambled in your life. I want to explore.
Yeah.
I'm like, no. I do a terrible German accent too.
No, I was going to say, I like that your dad is that he's not like a, he's not like the German, like the contemplative, like, I can't remember the director's name that I'm trying to think of right now, but he's got very much more the authoritative sort of German. We are going to Vegas. He's very, very certain, not contemplative at all.
I love
Werner Herzog is what I was thinking of. Yeah.
I love when he calls me. He goes, "Hello, Susie, Daddy calling. Hello." Like, "Hi, Dad." "Hello, Susie, Daddy calling."
"Hello, Susie."
"Hello,
Hello, like, Susie. Yeah, it's your daddy. Answer the phone."
That's what he sounds like. But here's the crazy
I'm going
thing:
to Vegas.
anyone who has a parent who has an accent. As a kid, you can't hear it. Like, I never knew my dad had an accent until people would tell, like, friends of mine would say, "Where's your dad from?" I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, "He talks weird." I'm like, "He does?" So I could never hear his accent as a kid. My mom, that's a different story. The New York accent, you got that, you know, Josie.
Yeah.
Dog, coffee, cool. I'll cool you.
It sounds like we'll coffee talk.
We'll talk.
That is so funny.
I'm verklempt.
And you never, isn't it? That is like the strangest thing about accents, that you like, it is more determined by the kids that you hang out with and go to school than your own household. It isn't like you had to fight to lose that accent.
And I believe it or not, had a wicked New York accent until I got into broadcasting. And they were like, ooh, you got to lose that accent. And I said, what accent? What are you talking about? Yeah, I would say I did a story. One of my first stories was about an autopsy. And they were like, no. They're like, autopsy. I'm like, autopsy. They're like, no, Susan, you're gonna need to lose that accent.
You guys ain't gonna believe what Susan's uncovered in the newest autopsy report. Susan, tell them. Oi.
Usually they can't find the bodies to do an autopsy on.
I would say I was from Albany. Just going,
oh!
Where are you from? I'm from Albany. Albany. Yeah, Albany.
All right. Well, next time you come on the show.
And look at me now. I have real news with a real broadcast.
Next time you come
voice.
On, we'll figure out a way to have your mom on with you.
Oh, she'd love to come
on. I want to talk to your dad, too. That's fascinating. I wonder what part of Germany he's from. Do you know?
He is from Bad Lautenberg, which I have to look up exactly where that is. That's a small, really small little town.
Yeah.
It's in the Harz Mountains, but
okay.
Yeah, I'm trying. I don't know exactly where in the country.
Bavarian kind of stuff.
You want me to Google it real fast for you?
Bad Lauten. My family was from Kiel.
Did you ever go back as a family, or did he ever go back to visit?
Oh yeah. We lived there every summer until I was probably in like seventh or eighth grade. So yeah, I went to first grade in Germany and didn't speak any German. I was like, hi guys.
No way. So that was interesting. Fascinating. I didn't know any of that.
Oh, can you please do like German words in a Jersey accent? Guten Tag.
We had coffee in Bad Lautenberg.
Ein, zwei, drei. Vier, fünf, sechs. Danke.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
That's all I know. I know. Tschüss. Oh. That means bye. Tschüss. But I remember as a kid being being traumatized because this was back in, you know, the 70s, and women in Germany didn't shave, and I had never seen that. And so women would like, you know, come, like relatives would come to like hug, and it would just be like underarm hair. And as a kid, you're like, oh,
right.
Hey, what's going on? I don't know what that is. And all the commercials, like if there's like a soap commercial, people are just naked in the commercial. Like there's just no, didn't care. They're not uptight. Like a Dove commercial for like body wash. It'd be a naked woman in the shower. My brother and I were like, oh, wow. Okay.
Just some guy washing his naughty parts. The Dove is real, real nice.
Wow, we're just diving real deep into my
no, that's good
life.
I like it. This is your life, Susan Copen. Next time we'll get your relatives from Bad Lautenberg, and he was my favorite Cowboys quarterback, but we'll have your mom on, all kinds of people. All right, do we have any actual news we have to talk about? Because I don't really care. Just, yeah, look up your German background.
Bad Lautenberg is in Lower Saxony. How's that?
I don't know.
Lower Saxony?
Mm-hmm. Your
gorgeous
father,
in the spring.
He will not eat pumpkin. No, do not make him a pumpkin pie. He does not like that or turnips.
Stealing food from farms.
Mike
Nichols had a similar plight to come to the United States, actually. And it was the same way. He was a German kid who basically had to come over with his brother on a ship by themselves. And then just kind of like, you know, meet one parent here and wait for the other one that didn't, you know, come for another couple of years. It's unthinkable, those kinds of scenarios today. Like, just go and eventually you'll be reunited with your family, but who knows when. Like, what kind of trauma does that lead? No wonder they were all so successful.
Mm-hmm.
They were fending right. for themselves at age eight.
It is. I learned, you know, so much from my dad about work ethic and never giving up. And hey, man, you know, he would tell us all the time, the $200 borrowed money and the suitcase and coming to America and making a life for himself. So.
I was going to say, Susan, one of the things, like, you know, the way that they grew up, like my grandparents grew up this way, a lot of the focus was on working and becoming an adult. So they kind of sacrificed a lot of their childhood for what ended up being the majority of their life, which is adulthood. And that is what Battle Hymn of the Tiger song is about, or the Tiger Mom. And it's about how it's just a different approach to parenting, where they're raising young adults and they're not, they sort of bypass the childhood, where for some reason in this country, we're like, no, we want to go full bore into the childhood. We want stay in Disney World as long as you can. And then the drop off is pretty great, you know, because then you're like, I had so much fun then. And now all this adulting sucks.
It's true. Yeah. It's very true.
Well, that's the difference. Her dad coming here with $200 and a borrowed suitcase. And the bravest thing I had ever done at that point in my life was go to spring break in Cancun with $200. Like, I was coming back if things didn't work out. I should be able to get through a week on this, don't you think? But he was going to start a new life with that. That's why I think this pandemic is going to play out so that kids who are suffering through, because they think how good and how easy everything is for people now because of technology. And then to have so much of their lives taken away, the freedom taken away when you're at a formidable age, I think a lot of kids are going to come out of this a lot better for it, but maybe a little emotionally scarred, but they'll be a little more determined because this has made them that way. Does that make any sense to you? Like, the being deprived actually makes you bust your ass a little bit more.
Yeah, my dad, at one point they ran out of toilet paper, so we found like pumpkins. An industrial roll to send to them on, you know, on the internet, and we sent it to them. And I said, you know, what are you gonna do without toilet paper? And my dad said, I survived World War II without toilet paper and no food. I'll survive this. Like, it was like no big deal, you know. He's like,
yeah, right,
this is nothing. You know, and then he was a young doctor during polio. And so he was telling me all about, you know, how they would have to be completely covered and masked up and decontaminate when they went from room to room. And so he's been through all of this in his lifetime. He has seen so much. So he's taken this all in stride.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing, too, that this is just another thing for him at 80?
Yeah.
Pandemic. Yep. Seen it.
Going to Vegas.
Been there.
Yeah, going to Vegas.
Going to Vegas.
I got the shingles and I'm going to Vegas.
You do a better impression of my dad than I do. Hello, Susie.
Let me do the lime.
All right. It's Biography with Susan Copen will return after this. A quick break. And Tim Benz will be filling in for Pursuito with a sports update for you. That's great stuff. I really want to have your parents on one of these days.
I love that.
Okay, I'll see if they're available.
Yeah, see if we can make that happen. Liz Berlin from Mr. Small is also going to be joining us to talk about an initiative being put forth across the country. 90% of independent music venues are going to fail if something isn't done quick. And you can be a part of making sure that something does happen to save all of those stages. Hashtag save our stages has been trending for a reason. People want to get involved. And if you're listening to this, you most likely love live music. Well, let's ensure that it has a place to be performed. And all of these people who work so hard to keep the Pittsburgh music scene alive and music scenes in cities across the country can maintain their stages. Liz is helping to front that cause, and she'll tell you more about it and how you can get involved. It's super easy. That'll be coming up at 8:45 here on DVE.
Macy's.
DVE Sports.
All right, Tim Benz filling in for Pursuit with your sports right now on the DVE Morning Show.
Well, since we last spoke, got some details from the National Football League making a statement about the Washington Redskins situation. The story coming out yesterday in the Post that 15 different women who had worked in the Redskins front office had made complaints about various levels of sexual harassment that took place, one on the record, 14 off the record. According to what the NFL said, here's their quote as follows: "These matters, as reported, are serious, disturbing, and contrary to the NFL's values. Everyone in the NFL has the right to work in an environment free from any and all forms of harassment. Washington has engaged outside counsel to conduct a thorough investigation of these allegations. The club has pledged that it will give its full cooperation to investigators, and we expect the club and all employees to do so. We will meet the attorneys upon the conclusion of their investigation and take any action based on their findings." So, in other words, if and only if the people that Dan Snyder hired to investigate Dan Snyder take their findings of Dan Snyder to the NFL and say, get rid of Dan Snyder, that's the only way Dan Snyder's getting out from the Washington Football Club. So don't hold your breath, which is pretty much what we anticipated, I think, in advance of this whole thing coming out in the first place.
This is unacceptable. We're going to investigate ourselves.
Right.
I don't know, though, based on what's been written, if there would have been any further action taken by the NFL itself. Like, the investigators are going to have to dig a lot deeper than what the Washington Post put into print, or they're going to have to corroborate potentially some stuff that the Washington Post might have left out of print that they can find themselves not put in print because they're, you know, counsel for the organization itself, give that to the NFL. Now, that could implicate Snyder further, so I doubt that's going to happen. I think the long and the short of this is like we talked about in the 6:30 sportscast, for as much lead-up as there was to this, it does not rise to the level of what we saw with Jerry Richardson, Carolina, and Donald Sterling with the Clippers.
More on this with Les Carpenter at 9:15 this morning. Les from the Washington Post was one of the contributors to this story, and we'll be able to get a little more information and perspective on this story and its potential impact in the NFL.
As for hockey, the Penguins are getting set to take off for Toronto after a couple more weeks of training camp. They've got the Canadian series starting on the 1st. They've got the game against the Flyers on the 28th is a preseason game. That's at 4 o'clock. And Justin Schultz says that's going to be an important thing for the Penguins to go through because of what Mike Sullivan said. We played that clip earlier in the week where Sullivan said the team looks like it's in great shape, but there's a big difference between playing a game and having conditioning with physical contact and just skating up and down the ice. Schultz echoes that and says playing the Flyers is the perfect remedy for a preseason game.
Yeah, just being smart, not trying to go out there and hurt guys on our own team, trying to get to Toronto healthy. And, you know, it's nice we have that exhibition game to kind of get a feel for it. And it's nice this game against Philly, against a rivalry. So I don't think we'll have a problem. And we're all excited to get there.
Meanwhile, Tristan Jarry, goaltender for the Penguins. It looks like it'll be Matt Murray's net to start for the Pens against the Canadiens. Both he and Jarry are expected to get 30 minutes apiece, or roughly thereabouts, against Philadelphia in the exhibition game, according to Seth Rorba, who joined me for our Breakfast with Ben's podcast yesterday. If Jarry should face the Canadiens, here's what he is anticipating from them and what Matt Murray should anticipate if he's the one between the pipes.
Yeah, I think it's just getting into a rhythm and making sure you're prepared for all angles of the shots. Like playing against them this year, they shoot a lot of pucks from the corner, and basically, whenever they have an opportunity to get the puck on the net, it's coming at you. So I think it's just being prepared at all areas of the ice and making sure that you're able to handle it and do the best you can to cover it or make a play with it.
Apparently, Tristan Jarry joining us from the Greyhound submarine from the Tom Hanks movie.
Yeah, right. Death charges going off there.
You know, fun thing, interesting about the Canadians, they're not very good, but they do have more high danger scoring chances and shots on goal per game than what you would anticipate for a team that would have finished out of the playoffs. Now, the Pirates, they're preparing to play the Indians in an exhibition game tomorrow night. Joe Musgrove to start. They begin the season a week from today in St. Louis. And lastly, wanted to get to this. I saw this on ESPN.com. Here is a list of what some of the NBA players brought into the NBA bubble to keep themselves occupied in advance of games. Myers Leonard from your Miami Heat. A suitcase full of Level protein bars. Like, these are the things that they need to get by while they are in the bubble. Not just like a box of Level protein bars, a suitcase full of boxes of Level protein bars. His Origin PC, whatever that means, one monitor, his mic, his camera, multiple SCUF controllers, and an Astro headset. I don't know what any of that sentence was that I just read you guys.
SCUF controllers.
That might as well have been in German from Susan Copen's father's hometown. I have no idea what any of that meant, but apparently it's essential for this guy to get through the bubble, okay? Here's another one. Miles Turner from the Indiana Pacers.
I survived World War II with all the SCUF controllers. What?
Miles Turner, he needs his Star Wars Y-Wing Lego set. Now, that reference I do know. I do remember what a Y-Wing was from The Empire Strikes Back. Seven different barbecue sauces. His quote was, "I'm not exactly sure what we're getting into food-wise around here, so I probably have like 7 or 8 different seasonings and sauces that I bring with me." Goran Dragic from the Heat, he brought his own UV LED light for sanitizing that his wife gave him, so he's going to sanitize what everybody in the bubble hasn't sanitized already. And then lastly, Taco Falls, the 7'6" center for the Boston Celtics. He's got one of these, and a lot of these guys from the NBA have these, the recovery pumps, like for your body.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're, well, they might look like something else, a different kind of pump.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And maybe they need that for different reasons. I don't know. I don't know what kind of recovery we're talking about here, but everybody seems to have them. And if you're not allowed to break the bubble, or as we talked about on Monday, hire anybody from Instagram to come in and break the bubble for you. Maybe these pumps have sort of multiple facets and multiple uses for these players.
It's got a wall mount.
When we come back, Liz Berlin from Mr. Small, she's going to talk about the need for everyone who loves live music to get involved in saving stages. Independent venues on track to lose 90% of theaters, clubs across the country. If things continue this way without any relief, you can get involved. It's super easy. Liz is going to tell you how next. It's Randy Bauman in the E-Morning Show, welcoming our good friend Liz Berlin right now from Mr. Smalls. And Liz, who's been so active in the Pittsburgh music scene for years, first and still as a performer, but taking the dual role also as an independent venue operator. And now more than ever, there is a need for help for independent venues across the country. And there's an association called NEVA that we're going to talk about and the quest to save stages across the country in the midst of the pandemic. Liz, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm excellent. How are you?
I'm good, all things considered. Yeah, I miss live music. I miss seeing you in person.
Oh,
and I miss going to Smalls and seeing shows.
I know. We miss you, too. We miss everybody so much.
Well, all right. Well, let's first talk about this. There are a lot of businesses that are struggling, smaller businesses in particular. But one that really seems to be left in the lurch right now is the independent venues across the country. The National Independent Venue Association is doing good work to raise awareness, but talk a little bit about what they're doing and what we all can do. Everybody listening to this right now loves music and wants to see it come back.
Awesome. Yes. I've been working with the National Independent Venue Association since this all started. We have a Pittsburgh chapter and we've been very active trying to spread the word that, our businesses, our industry was the first to close and we're going to be the last to open at our full capacities, which, you know, we're independent concert venues on a scale anywhere from, 500 to 1,000 to 2,000, et cetera. But, so we have like during this whole time, we have zero revenue, but we still have 100% of the expenses of you know, venues of our size. And so even if we are able to do a little bit here and there, open at a lower capacity, it's not going to be anywhere near the scale that is sustainable for our businesses.
Right.
So the big focus of NEVA right now is we're trying to push support for the Restart Act, which is critical for last phase businesses, which is what we are. It's geared towards lost revenue as opposed to payroll. In addition to being a 6-month program as opposed to, you know, with PPP, it was like 8 weeks for fixed for payroll. PPP was thoughtful and everything, but, you know, we don't have any payroll right now. We're closed and mm-hmm. we don't know when we're going to be open. So, you know, it's more, the Restart Act is just more tailored to, you know, the situation that's going on for independent venues. There's 2,000 venues across the country are members of NEVA. And of those 2,000, 90% of them say that if there is not some assistance, if this lasts more than 6 months, that they will be closing.
Oh, I mean, that's just changing the fabric of the country.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's like eliminating the entire like stepping stone for artists to become famous. Like, it's like, where do you start?
Yeah.
What's going to be left? What opportunity is going to be left? And not to mention all of the workers, all of the people that work in these venues, from, you know, bartenders and service, but also the sound people, the stage crew. And, you know, in addition to that, even just like the peripheral benefit, like I know that since Mr. Smalls started here, God, almost 20 years ago, I've had a lot of business owners from Millvale really express to me their appreciation of how much our presence here has increased amount of business that they get.
No doubt about it. I mean, Mr. Smalls has helped revamp that entire area. Millvale had turned a corner a few years ago, I think, and had, you know, become like a hot spot in town and yeah. In large part thanks to you guys. So I mean, the collateral effect of what you're doing there has been felt, there's no doubt. But like you say, if we can't find a way to sustain these independent venues through this pandemic, you know, look, if Tom Brady can get $1 million for his TB12, we can figure out a way to fund independent venues, for crying out loud.
I know. You know. Come on, guys. Like, this is where the public goes,
you know, for inspiration
and for sanity, you know?
Oh, like, there's no question. All of our mental health is affected by not seeing live music. You should have just had Mr. Smalls, like, listed as a religion since it's a church, and you would have been more likely to have been bailed out.
Right, or a mental health organization.
Yeah. Well, it's very much that for me and many other people. So what can we do to help raise awareness, to talk to people? What should we be writing our congressmen? Are we doing this online? What do people need to do, Liz?
Absolutely. If you visit saveourstages.com, they make it really easy. There's a form there. You can fill out, put your name in, and there's a letter already written to Congress that you can add in your own 2 cents, you know, make it personal. Tell them about your first date and your favorite concert at your favorite venue and how much this means to you. And then just, you know, hit send and send these letters off. We have 1 million letters to Congress urging them to support the Restart Act. And a lot of artists are sending letters to Congress as well. Well, there's a big artist letter that was sent to Congress that has signatures from Billie Eilish, Lady Gaga, Billy Joel, Foo Fighters, Dave Matthews Band, like mm-hmm. every major artist is signing on to support this. But we need everybody. We need like just a mass influx of support from just everybody. All right,
we're going to make it easy. We're going to push this out through DVE social media too and get it on our website, because people need to get involved and make sure that not just here in Pittsburgh, but across the country, music venues like this are spared, because it's just too important, man. And like you said, I know that you're going to be able to have some sort of limited capacity operation going soon. What is Mr. Smalls going to be able to offer in the near future?
Well, the first thing that we're planning is, assuming that the numbers don't spike and the regulations don't change, we're planning on a grand reopening of Mr. Small's Cafe on July 31st. We're going to be taking it outside. We're going to take over all of Butler Street. which is the hill beside Mr. Smalls, putting tables out there. And we're going to have musicians perform up on the wheelchair ramp. So it's going to be an elevated stage throughout the day. And we'll have a brand new menu of drinks, including fresh juices and desserts and, of course, beer and liquor. And a new food menu as well. So that's the first thing that we're going to try doing. Mm-hmm. And then we're hoping to be able to get the theater up and running, more as a restaurant towards the end of August, and doing, greatly limited capacity. We probably will be able to fit about 130 people in there per seating, but we're talking about doing it sort of as a dinner theater paradigm where we have people come in, have their dinner, see their show, and then leave so that the next people can come in. So that's okay. Kind of what we're looking at to try and, you know, create something for ourselves. Cause right now we have nothing and we have no idea when that's going to change.
Well, we'll do everything we can on our end to get the word out and tell people they do need to go to that website. You've got to sign up. You got to make your voice heard. It is crucial right now. Neva,
absolutely.
It's NIVASSOC.org, and they make it easy to take action there, like Liz was saying. While I have you on, you know, we were talking last week. I think it was, well, maybe it was 2 weeks ago. It was the anniversary of the Rain Show when the Grateful Dead played Three River Stadium and you opened for them with Rusted Root.
Yeah.
And I was just talking about that second set for the Dead, and Rusted Root was just great. And that was just so cool to have Rusted Root there in Pittsburgh with the Grateful Dead. And it seemed like such a great way to kick off that whole day. And that second set, though, the Rain, I mean, it really did feel like a bucket of water was poured on my head the second I heard noise.
I know.
The second they started playing,
it was amazing. I was actually out in the crowd when that happened. It was my first Grateful Dead show ever. I was never a really big Dead fan, so imagine my first Dead show ever. I'm opening for them, and you know, I had gone out to sort of explore the vibe and explore the crowd, and that's when the Rain happened, and it was like this crazy, like I don't know, this crazy thing, this crazy thing that washed over the crowd. It was a beautiful moment.
Was that the first Three River Stadium show you guys did, or was it the only one?
That was the only Three River Stadium show that we ever did.
Yeah, that had to be surreal for you. I mean, I can't imagine you were much older than 21 at that point.
I was pretty young. I was the young one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And any memories of being able to say hi to any of the band? Was the any of the guys from the Dead milling around, or were they pretty private?
You know, it was actually very structured. They had actually duct taped lines along the backstage of like, this is where you're allowed to walk and you have to turn here.
Wow.
To your dressing room. And if you see any members of the band, do not look at them.
Nuh-uh.
It was very strict.
Don't look at them.
Don't look at them. Don't try to talk to them.
Oh, my God. That is so not what I would have pictured the Grateful Dead to be. You know what where I would have thought that would have happened to you guys is when you toured with Page and Plant. And I know you and Jen have told me it was the exact opposite.
It was the exact opposite. Page and Plant were like super like approachable. Like I just would just wander over to their dressing room and go and say hey and talk to them about stuff. You know, but it was a crazy time for the Dead. Like there was crazy stuff going on. You know, Jerry passed away very shortly thereafter. That was the last Pittsburgh stop for that, you know, for them at all before Jerry passed away. So I'm sure that, you know, they were in the mode of trying to protect the artists and give the artists space to deal with what was happening in their lives, you know, health wise and probably interpersonally as well.
Well, you've had that was a tumultuous time in the band's history, no doubt about
it.
And sort of the culmination of it all. And you have been busy locally, too, though, performing. I mean, you're still, I know through the pandemic, it's been tough since everything's been shut down. We can't really do live shows, but you have so much going on with, I know, the social justice disco that has been going on. And what other things can people check out that you have been performing on?
Well, at the Social Justice Disco, we just did a set for the Three Rivers Arts Festival, which I believe is still available.
Okay.
I've also performed on a couple of live stream benefit shows that I helped put together. Mm-hmm. I did the Pittsburgh Women's Music Festival a while back.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Mm-hmm. So you can find that at Creative Life Support's Facebook page. And then also more recently, I performed at a benefit called Black Lives Matter Here, which was actually organized by my 15-year-old real-life music camp studio, Gabriella Salvucci.
No way.
She organized this concert, and you know, we helped her put it together through Creative Life Support. And you can find that as well on Creative Life Support's Facebook page. All of the proceeds from that went to benefit One Hood Media.
Oh, very cool. You must be beaming with pride.
Oh, it's very, yeah, definitely proud.
Okay, Liz, anything else that we need to touch on before we go?
Yeah, just, you know, visit SaveOurStages.com and send that letter. Congress returns from recess on July 24th, and that's when they're going to begin voting on new legislation for Phase 3 funding. So that's our time frame. Visit SaveOurStages.com and send those letters.
Well, you've done so much good for the community, the musical community in particular here in Pittsburgh, and I know everyone will want to get involved and get behind saving our stages across the country. Liz Berlin from Mr. Smalls. We'll get this all out on social media for everybody. Thank you once again, and stay healthy and say hi to Mike, and I'll see you guys soon, I hope.
All right, will do. Thanks so much.
I want to talk to your dad, too. That's fascinating. I wonder what part of Germany he's from. Do you know?
He is from Bad Lautenberg.
Did you ever go back as a family, or did he ever go back to visit?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We lived there every summer until I was probably in like seventh or eighth grade. So, yeah, I went to first grade in Germany and didn't speak any German. I was like, hi, guys.
No way. So that's fascinating. I didn't know any of that.
Oh, can you please do like German words in a Jersey accent?
We had coffee in Bad Lautenberg.
Ein, zwei, drei. Vier, fünf, sechs. Danke.
Randy Bauman and the DVE Morning Show.
We talked with Susan Copen's mom during the commercial break. She called her. You woke her up at like 8:45. I love that they sleep in that late. Most people that age don't sleep that late. That's awesome.
But my dad said, "Who's this?" I'm like, "Dad, it's me, your daughter. Remember, Susie? Hello." And then my mom said she was getting up to make coffee.
Do you?
I heard her say that from down the hall.
Yeah, we're having a coffee. Do you find yourself as a parent doing the things your parents did or using the phrasing your parents did? I mean, everyone talks about how you eventually will turn into your parents, but given that your parents had such unique different lexicons to draw from, do you use any of the phrases you heard as a kid?
Yes, and I am everything I hated about my parents. You know, it's like all the things you hate about your parents, I see them in me now like double. I'm like, oh, how did I become everything that, you know, like the phrases that come out. My mom was always good with the Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Yeah. She always had that one.
I knew my dad was mad when he added on the cross when he used, you know, when he did the JHC. Jesus bleep and bleep on the cross. Like, well, what's the distinction there? I mean, you know, that's the bad blaspheme.
No, yeah.
It's Jesus, bad. Mary, it's and Joseph. Yeah.
Well, I told Bill, we did that podcast about parenting, and I told Bill the story when I was a kid. My mom, we lived in a ranch house, and it was sort of like a loop. Like you could run a circle through the house the way it was set up. And my mom, when she was angry, used to chase us with a leather belt. And we would just run that loop and try to outrun her. Now, as an adult, I realize she really wasn't trying to catch me. You know, like she probably could have caught up to me if she just wanted to scare me. So I don't do that to my children. I don't chase them around with the brown leather belt.
No, you use a tennis racket. And
but you don't have the same backstory that your dad does. You can't like talk about like I ate pumpkin for 4 months and didn't have toilet paper.
Right. I know. I try to, what can I use against them? I'd be like, I had the best childhood ever. Okay.
When I was your age, everything was great. So Please help me do the dishes.
You kids have it just as good as I had it.
You should
Billy,
make the
I
meat
know
pumpkin.
You say the same stuff as your mom.
Oh yeah. Well, my mom used to threaten us quite a bit. She's also Italian, and her favorite thing to say to us was, "Life as you knew it is over." So life as I knew it was always over. Whatever life was as you knew it, that's over. And then she would pick up whatever was closest to her. She used to, you know, the thing that they scoop spaghetti with, that was her back scratcher. So that's usually what she would try to hit us with. I was like, you're going to throw that in the washer before spaghetti night, right? It's
She'd scratch her back with that pasta thing. That's hilarious.
Yeah. So your mom was now the pandemic I know to get her for before Christmas. The pandemic. Life is over as you know it.
Life as you know it is over.
Susan Copeland has been BSing with us here. We have Les Carpenter from the Washington Post coming on in a little bit. Is there any news stories that you need to get to here?
Some of the big stories are mortgage rates. If you're looking to buy a home, mortgage rates fell below 3%. The average 30-year fixed rate mortgage fell to 2.98% this week. So that is big news. Everyone's wondering about back to school and what will the back to school protocol be. And so the State Department of Education has set up guidelines for kids returning to school. And they do say at any moment, the state could say, hey, guess what? You're not going back to school. We're going to go to online learning only. But in the meantime, they are encouraging caregivers. You have to screen your kids before they go to school. If they have a fever, they need to stay home. If they have a cough, they need to stay home. And, you know, that is always the challenge for parents, because if my kids stayed home every time they told me they were sick, they'd never be at school, right? Like, there's always the, I'm just not feeling good, mom. You know, now I'm going to keep them home. Where before I'd be like, you're fine. Take a tissue. Here's a cough drop. Go. Yeah. Now things have totally changed. So if my kids say they don't feel good, you know, they're staying home. If they ride
what
the
a
bus,
boon to all of the ne'er-do-well kids out there, all the Ferris Buellers out
all
there.
All the Ferris Buellers, yeah.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, what do you do if your kid says they don't feel good? You have to keep them home. If they're riding the bus, they need to wear a mask, they need to use hand sanitizer, and they're going to be seating people from the back to the front and keeping the windows on the bus open.
Although I would argue that given the pandemic, the fact that everybody's been home for 5 months, nobody's going to be pulling that anymore. They all want to go to school. So you're actually going to have to be on your toes to find out if the kid is feeling under the weather, because they want to be with their friends.
Totally right. Yeah, I think you're totally right about that.
The other thing that I think about with the buses is, okay, say you are a working parent, you send your kid to school on a bus. He gets to the school, maybe they take his temperature, he has a high temperature, he ends up testing positive. Do you then quarantine that whole bus? Any teacher, like the contact tracing through a school is quickly going to, like, does that class or that bus just go online school for the next 2 weeks? Like, those are the sort of logistical things that I think are going to be difficult to deal with.
Yeah, and that's what's causing so much anxiety for parents and for the teachers and the administrators. You know, what is going to happen and the uncertainty of it all. Something else that the state is advising schools to do, they want them to eliminate lockers so kids don't have a place that they're all standing next to each other. And then at lunchtime, they can eat in the classroom, or if they are going to a cafeteria, they need to sit 6 feet apart and they can't share food. Yeah. Can you remember what it was like to be in a school cafeteria? There's no sitting 6 feet apart. Everybody shares food.
A lot of trading.
I've seen some pictures of high school hallways, and, you know, I forgot what it was like to be in the hallway in between periods. If they don't stagger the times that you change classes, there's no way that they're going to be able to do this safely, because that alone, asymptomatic kids are going to spread it all over the school. Just going from class to class, they're on top of each other. It's like a subway at rush hour going from class to class in a lot of these schools.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they are talking about that, staggering the classes so different times will be, you'll be released from a class maybe 5 minutes before the other class and make that happen. But it'll be interesting to see what happens.
A lot of the schools, too, like my daughter's middle school, she will stay in basically the same class with the same group for most of the day. So they're not like, remember in high school, it was for us, it was like, first period is over in the annex, and then the second period, you're all the way at the other end of the school. They're going to keep them sort of with the same group in the same part of the school for the most part as well.
Yeah, they'll cluster the same kids together, so they're always with the same kids, whether it's on the school bus or it's in the classroom.
I wonder how they'll discipline kids or how that will change. It's like, be you like go to the principal's ruler. Office. Yeah, right. So interesting developments going on with sending these kids back to school. And I'm sure we're going to probably have different scenarios all the way up until the first bell rings. Joined on the phone now here on the DVE Morning Show by Washington Post sports reporter Les Carpenter, who's on the line. Good morning, Les. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
Okay. You know, there was a lot of expectation for this story that dropped yesterday. Of course, 15 women coming forward to describe these just draconian work conditions that Daniel Snyder and his crew had fomented there at Redskins Park. But the first question I have for you is the name change issue with the team. Do you think that was used as a diversion this year to divert away from the impact of this impending story?
Well, no, because that is an overriding issue with this team. There was this enormous pressure to change the name, which came several weeks ago. About 2 weeks ago, the team announced it was going to do a thorough review of the name. At that point, you knew the name was going to have to change. The top sponsor had already said it was going to take the name off the stadium if the team didn't do this. So that was already in the works. This was separate. There's kind of a lot of fires burning right now with this team, including with the story that we're talking about here, the name change, and the fact that three minority partners of the team, 40% of the ownership, is actively trying to sell. So there's a lot going on here all at once, and it's all kind of come together at this particular time.
So a lot of the people in the article accused of harassment are no longer there. Was that as a result of an internal review that went on there, or because they knew that you guys were going to drop the hammer?
You know, they haven't commented on that, so I can't say specifically. I know that allegations against each of the three people who are no longer there were brought to the team, and within days of those allegations being brought, those people were gone. Now, whether or not, you know, the team has never said officially that is the case for why they are no longer there.
Les, can you take us behind the curtain a little bit and what it was like for you and everybody else at the Post yesterday to go through the time where everybody was anticipating the story hitting and when it actually did? Was it always supposed to hit at about 5:30, or were there other things going on that prevented you guys from moving it earlier?
Well, I mean, and the two key reporters on this are Will Hobson and Liz Clark. They did the bulk of the work on this. And, you know, one of the things when you do a story of this nature, you want to be sure you have everything right. You want to edit it. You want to run it through lawyers. You want to make sure that everybody, you know, obviously a lot of this was going back to the team and talking with the team. There were several conversations I know between, the writers and the reporters and the team. There's an awful lot that goes into a story like this to make sure that you have everything correct. I mean, there's a lot of people's reputations here. So, you just don't rush something like this out. I was kind of a little alarmed at what some of the people started in this market. It was actually people in the media in this market were sort of building a hype for a story that they even in tweets said, we don't even know what the story is, but it's going to be big. And then that just let everybody's imagination run wild. And I it just became crazy looking at some of the things that were being retweeted by people in the media, or, you know, stories being written by media outlets about a looming story that sort of hinted at things that weren't even in here. And my worry is 15 women, you know, this is a very courageous thing that they did. And I, mm-hmm. would hope that nothing from that hype takes away from the fact of what these women had to say, because I, you know, this was very courageous for a lot of people to do here.
Les, I was wondering the timing of this piece, because the main accuser, Mrs. Applegate, she was an employee there from 2014 to 2015. So my question is, why now? Like, what was the impetus for this story coming out now?
Well, I think with all the other things going on in this franchise, you know, there was a need to go and kind of look at, well, how has this team been running in recent? What is it that is forcing three of the co-owners to say, we're done with the owner, we want out of here? I mean, what is it with the culture? And so this was one of the elements that you know, was being looked at. You know, I think in sometimes when things like this happen, more people are, you know, feel free to actually kind of talk. And so I'm not privy on all those conversations. I don't know why, you know, some of them occurred now, why some women came forward now and didn't before. You know, there's a couple sports writers named in there. One of them is a friend of mine, something about which I've never even spoken with her about. So, you know, I think it's probably a matter of timing given everything that's going on. I can't emphasize enough that this is a franchise right now that has very, very significant issues that all of each one in their own would be momentous, all going on at once.
So let's get back for a second to the internet just blowing this way out of proportion before it was reported yesterday. And like you said, there were media types around the DC area who were tweeting out things and setting expectations sky high that, you know, I thought from what I was reading, I thought that Daniel Snyder was going to be dragged out of his office in handcuffs. That's what I was expecting, mm-hmm. based on what the internet did. Now, that's something that, you know, the internet does. Social media does that kind of thing. But do you have any inkling that Snyder might have helped feed into that? Like, yeah, keep letting people think it's going to be this huge thing. Because ultimately, as wrong as it is, like you said, the courageous act of these women, it seems to be diminished by the set expectations of people who thought that this was going to destroy Daniel Snyder the moment it hit. And I don't know that it had quite that kind of impact, though it is terrible.
No, I don't get any sense that either Daniel Snyder or anyone at the Reds, at this, I keep saying Reds, they're changing the name. It's hard not to say it anymore. That anyone in that franchise, you know, in any way tried to push this. Every sense I have gotten through this is that the team has taken these allegations very seriously. And certainly the implication of the, you know, what many of the people are saying throughout the story is that the team hadn't done this in the past. And I think one other thing to kind of mention in that is that there is a culture change. The former team president, Bruce Allen, who was there for 10 years, is gone. It was under his reign that a lot of this took place. But I think the overall culture created by him and ultimately by Dan Snyder has sort of allowed some of these things to happen in the past. Ron Rivera has come in as a coach. I think he's been very open about wanting to change culture. He had a statement yesterday that said he would not tolerate this kind of thing in the building. Now, he's just a football coach, but he's been given a lot of power here, power that most coaches have not been given in the organization, to sort of oversee the whole place a little bit. And, you know, I get a sense of different tone with him. And, you know, I do feel that probably has trickled into the team's response to this. It seems a little different this time than maybe it has in the past.
Les, to where do we go from here questions, the first of which is the response from the NFL. What do you make of that and how the league will handle things moving forward? And what you alluded to about the name change, what's the calendar on that now as a result of this? Is there any dovetailing going on there with how they're responding?
Well, taking the first one, the team has hired an attorney in Washington who is obviously very respected in this town to look at, you know, everything that has been going on that, you know, that the women have talked about in that general culture.
She will make recommendations, is what the team said. I read the league's statement to say that they're going to wait to see what she says and then probably implement whatever she recommends. I suggest the team, you know, implement those things. I don't know that necessarily there's a greater action here. And I realize that everybody's wondering, is this a threat to Dan Snyder's ownership? I don't know that this necessarily is a threat to the ownership as much as three owners looking to get at, co-owners looking to get out. I think that would be where the threat is. The second part was the name, and I forgot what you asked about that now.
Just, does this change the calendar in which they're trying to get the name change out? Like, more bad press, do they hold off on giving the name change because now it's not going to be met with this?
No, I don't think it's a matter of bad press. It's just a matter of, there's no team president right now. I mean, you know, in a sense, that's Ron Rivera, and he's a football coach, and there are some outside consultants that are working in kind of that team president role or overseeing role in the business side. Yeah, I just don't know that changing a name is a significant issue. You just can't do it overnight. I mean, this often takes corporations 2 months at minimum to kind of do a rebranding. This is a big football team. So, this is a process that takes time. And, you know, things like the story that is here that they've spent a lot of time working on as an organization, probably slows things down. But I don't know that necessarily you say that there's bad press and you're trying to run out good press or, you know, things like that. I'm not sure that that's necessarily how things are operating. I think it's more like, camp's starting in a couple of weeks. We've got a new name. We got to figure out ownership. We got to figure out all these things. There's just a lot going on.
Les Carpenter from the Washington Post, who contributed to the story from Will Hobson and Liz Clark in today's Washington Post. The NFL is basically going to allow the Redskins to investigate themselves, which I don't think is going to result in any huge condemnations going forward. I'm sure there were a lot of front offices who got real nervous at some of the behavior that they've allowed through the years, whether it was up to the line of this or approaching or even worse. But do you have the sense that the NFL might act a little more globally in instituting some workplace reminders, as the only way I can think to put it? There seems to be a need for some uniformity here in terms of having more bolstered HR for these employees to go to.
No, I'm sure of that. And I think in recent years, because of some high profile incidents, the NFL has become more proactive on this kind of a thing. I would expect the league to continue to want to do that. And yeah, whatever the recommendations are that will be made, this is an attorney that everybody respects. And so this is someone whose voice the NFL will definitely want to listen to. I expect that everyone will probably get some kind of a memo at some point, or at least a quiet general reminder, make sure that, you're taking care of business in your organizations. But I would say, again, it comes back to a bigger question of culture. That's something I hear over and over and over and over again when I've been around this franchise in recent years, is the culture here, the culture here, the culture here. Ron Rivera came in and culture is a very big thing to him. So it's nice to hear somebody talk about wanting to create something positive. But I think the best organizations, the best run teams around football, especially football, have the best cultures for the whole organization. They have the best front office cultures, the best work, environments, the best place where people feel like they are a part of the team, even if they're not necessarily on the roster, have anything to do with the football side, whether ticket sellers or whatever. And so I think that's the problem that we continue to hear with the Redskins. And this is one of the things that has come up in this story. It's a culture.
So is there any truth? This is the last thing for you, Les. Any truth to the internet rumor that Jeff Bezos was calling you, Will, and Liz with directives to help take Daniel Snyder down so that he could buy the team?
My lines are open anytime Jeff Bezos needs to call, but I'm sure he's never, ever going to pick up that phone. And the thing is, before I came here to Washington, I lived in Seattle. I mean, Jeff Bezos had a kind of a condominium in a building across from the one I lived in for a while. You know about the guys that are into sports in that world and the guys who aren't. And Paul Allen ultimately bought the Seattle Seahawks and was a Microsoft co-founder and of course, Steve Ballmer. I mean, those were sports guys. Bill Gates and Bezos, you never heard about them with sports. I've never, ever, ever got the sense that he was interested in sports. And he could buy a football team tomorrow, and I'll be wrong, but I've never heard that he had that interest.
Well, thanks so much for making time for us, and great work with this piece. Les Carpenter from the Washington Post. Thanks again, man. All the best to you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Post sports writer Les Carpenter there, who was a contributor on that piece with Will Hobson and Liz Clark. It sounded like it was something out of North Dallas 40, Tim.
Yeah, and I found it really interesting that he, in essence, corroborated some of the things we were talking about early in the show today, that there was a lot of machinations and dialogue back and forth with lawyers and cleaning up the copy. And everything we had pontificated about earlier in the show, he more or less summed up there and suggested, that's part of the reason why it didn't move until 5:30 in the afternoon. And all that gap between early yesterday morning when the story moved, that gave life to all those rumors. It allowed them to take root and sprout, and that's why they became as well. What I wonder about that is, you know, that especially as he pointed out, and he seemed a little edgy about it, that other people in Washington were retweeting how big this was going to be and pumping it up.
Lackenfora.
That connotes to me that they heard stuff that they thought was going to be in that probably didn't get in. I would imagine in part because of those conversations with lawyers he was talking about with us a few minutes ago.
Yeah, but that's speculative too. You don't know. You don't know that. I mean, it could just be.
But that
I don't
makes know sense. That, but... Does make sense though. And that's all that really counts, right?
Yes. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk more with Susan because she didn't get to talk too much there, and we'll blow off sports. There's nothing we got to talk about in sports, right?
Nothing really. No, not beyond that.
Okay. Unless you're really then let's take a commercial break and come back, and we'll figure something else to talk about.
Macy's.
It's Randy Bauman in the DV Morning Show. Susan Copen hanging out with us this morning, and it was good to talk with Les Carpenter there, sports writer from the Post, Washington Post. That is, I call it the Post. That's what we do in the business. And they
the biz.
He was one of the contributors to that that story yesterday that lacked the oomph that some of the internet thought it was going to have, but was still egregious beyond comprehension that they would allow that workplace to continue there in that manner. It was just like, it sounded like if a 19-year-old dude was in charge of an office. I cannot believe the way they spoke to women in that office. All right. Now, Bill and Susan, this will resonate with you guys, I think, being parents. And for people who don't like your name, there's a good chance your parents didn't like it either. According to a new survey, 73% of parents say they thought of a better name for their kid after it was too late. Now, how late could it have been? Like a couple of years, and then they're like, oh, Darren. Damn it, it should have been.
Oh, Darren.
I don't know about that. That feels like Nick Kroll's character in The League. Aren't you outthinking yourself at that point? If you've had 9 months to consider this, the kid comes out and 3 months later, you're second guessing. What do you think the baby, now it looks like a Darren and before it looked like a Randall? I don't know about that. That feels like second
Namer's
guessing.
Namer's remorse.
Namer's remorse, right, yes.
Susan, here are some of the reasons why. Oh, do you have something? Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say with my first baby, I remember we had a tough time deciding what to name him because we had a name. Then he was born. And then we looked at him and we were like, no, that name doesn't fit him. So then we're in the hospital trying to figure out what name do we give him. I was even like asking the nurses. I'm like, well, what do you think about Jake? You think he looks like a Jake? And they were like, lady, just name your kid so you can get out of here because you couldn't leave the hospital until you named your baby. They're like, please, just pick a name. So we put wrote two names down on pieces of paper and we shoved them into his little baby hands. And we said, whichever name he's holding on to last is the name he gets. So he dropped one piece of paper. He had the other piece of paper in his hand and that's his name. So he named himself.
I love that. That's my brother, Gary, was named kind of like that. They didn't have a name for him, and it was they were up against it. So my mom and dad put a bunch of names in a hat, and shook up the hat. And my grandmother was like having a heart attack watching it. You know, it's like old Irish lady, like, you can't do this. It's like, God doesn't want it to happen this way. And then one of the pieces of paper flew out of the hat while he was shaking it up. And that was the one they chose. But some of
your
the reasons
were
why
betting on it. I got
yeah, oh, yeah, they did. Well,
plus three.
There was always betting pools on when kids would be born, weight and all that kind of stuff. You can't have a life event and not have a betting sheet on it. The reasons why parents regret the name they pick for their child. Number one, the name didn't fit their child's personality as they got older. You guys happy with your kids' names as they pertain to their personality so far?
I don't know what so name happy. Has to do with personality. Do you make a link there?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
I do too.
Like my daughter's.
You're definitely
Kennedy
a Tim.
Is Kennedy is 100% a Kennedy, and Emerson
Whoa,
is. We hush. Just call her. We just call her Emma. You know, I wanted to give the girls like strong names, where they basically have two last names, but, but Emerson is just she's Emma. You know,
the Kennedys were kind of hard partying, Bill. Is that what you're going for already at this age or what?
Yes. Okay. Tyler, Susan. She's really good at hockey. Still,
I like all my kids' names, and my daughter likes her name, but she does like her middle name better. And so she asked, why didn't you name me the middle name you gave me instead of the name you gave me? Because I had said, you know, I was debating between your name and your middle name and we, you know, gave you what we gave you. And she's like, well, I really kind of like my middle name better, but they all fit their names. Yeah. I like all of their names and their personalities fit their names.
Another reason why parents regret the name they pick for their kids, their significant other picked the name. Ooh, that'd be a tough one. I don't know. I think you both got to be okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
Both got to be okay with it. All right, this one is nonsensical to me. Third reason why. A friend picked the same name for their kid. Ooh.
Oh, yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, even worse, my brother named his dog the same name as one of our good friends' daughter at the same time. Unbeknownst Ooh. To one another, kind of like he didn't know my brother already named the dog. And then like a week later, our friend had his kid and named it the same name. So it was like, oh, the dog yeah. and the kid. Oh,
I was just going to say the first child is basically for the guy. You're sitting there for 9 months listening to the many different reasons why the baby can't be named whatever name you've come up with. Oh no, the neighbor down the street has a poodle that's named that, or you know, that show that I love, the kid's name is this. It's whatever it is. It's you're just crossing names off a list for 8.5 months.
And we went through that whole thing where we tried to think of the worst possible thing that could be done with a name to tease the kid. So we tried to find names where it didn't rhyme with something terrible. You know, it wasn't yeah. associated with like a serial killer, you know, like all the things you go through. You're like, what is the worst that other rotten kids could do to make fun of my kid with this name?
Well, I will say Orenthal Copen has a really nice ring to it. So I hope that wasn't the other piece of paper that the baby dropped, because I think you're onto something there.
Yeah, you have to put the name through a heckle generator.
That's one of the reasons why they regret. That's another one of the reasons. Number five, the kid gets teased for the name in school.
They call me Asswipe. It's Oswepe. We told you. We tried to name you.
That's German.
I'm going to name my child Oswepe and then go to Las Vegas with the shingles. Number four is they didn't give the name enough thought. Who doesn't give the name enough thought? It's not something you go, oh, I don't care. Jack, Jerry, whatever.
Jack, Jerry.
Do not name your kid Jack Jerry. No. they will fall into the number five conundrum. A kid gets teased in school for his name. Number six, explain this to
Jack
me.
Jerry.
The last reason that people regret the name they give their kids, according to this Daily Mirror survey, a celebrity picked the name for their child. What?
Like a picking a celebrity name for your child? Like a lot of people named their daughters Adele a few years back. I remember that. Is that what you mean?
That's close to one of the two most regrettable names for girls. The two girls' names that are most likely to be regrettable are Aurora and Arabella. And then the two boys' names that are most likely to, I guess Aurora and Arabella both kind of sound like stripper names. Like, it's like Disney princess. No,
definitely sound like stripper names.
The two boys' names that are most likely to be regretted by parents, Hunter and Jackson with an X, which I've never heard of that spelling before, but.
Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, is it? There's a character with the X? All right. So there you go. Yeah,
I believe the lead character is Jackson, Sons of Anarchy.
Hunter and Jackson both sound like the names of people who are in fireworks accidents.
Well, I know kids who have those names, and they're lovely children. Yeah, I like those names. I like Hunter and I like Jackson. I don't have a problem with those. Okay.
I do too.
I don't know any Auroras, though.
No, I don't either. And I wouldn't want to name my daughter after a princess who's in a coma for 100 years. I just would.
Aurora is a hard one to yell and get mad at him, though. You just end up sounding like a seal.
Aurora! Aurora! Aurora Guerrero!
Yeah, especially if her name is Aurora Guerrero.
Aurora Guerrero, get over here!
All right, let's do a quick break. We'll come back. DVE. We're talking about unfortunate names. It's the DVE Morning Show. And my Uncle Harpo, who was one of the funniest guys ever, used to do this thing when we were growing up. Our family had a carpet store, and a builder that they worked with up in Erie back in the day. And I don't know if he's still there or not, but they were named, it was, the guy's name was Peter Hardner. And it was Peter Hardner Builders. And they had a little intra-office intercom system on the phone. And oftentimes in the back office, when you would hear the secretary say into the phone, Jimmy, that was Harpo's name, Jimmy, Peter Hardner on line two. And my uncle would respond over the intercom, tell him I need a gallon of that stuff.
That's the greatest.
Dick Pound, IOC, another unfortunate name.
Yeah. Dick Trickle, Susan was trying to, racing great.
Susan was trying to refer to Josh Getzoff as being an unfortunate name.
Oh, and
it's not Josh, it's the Getzoff. No. I'm not sure that you can put anything in front of Getzoff that's not going to, you're just kind of in a bad situation there.
That's what you say after that. Josh Getzoff in the pool.
So I knew Josh probably, believe it or not, even with my bad way of trying to get to a pun whenever I can, I probably knew Josh for about 6 months, maybe a year. And it never resonated with me. It never hit me until I was on the air with him calling a Robert Morris game. And I said it, and it just sat there, and I was like, and now I'm laughing on the air for no particular reason, aside from what everybody can figure out on their own. I was like, Josh, I'm sorry, man. I just...
How about Dick Butkus? I mean, that's a pretty bad name right there.
But yeah, you have to be a badass to have that name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dick Butkus. Okay. No, you're fine. We're right, not going to make fun of you.
No, okay. It's good. No.
Mm-hmm. R.I.P. Jamie Oldacre, the Tulsa Sound, the drummer of renown. He died Thursday at age 68. And he'd been battling cancer. He is in the Oklahoma Music Hall of Fame, but he was the guy that toured with Clapton, Frampton, Bob Seger, Leon Russell, Stephen Stills, a founding member of the Tractors. He was a big part of that Tulsa rock sound and part of what Slowhand relied on that entire album was that backbeat and that sound. And let's pay a little tribute to the guy who was able to do that along with Carl Radel, the rhythm section that made it happen for Eric Clapton. Here's Lay Down Sally, DVE.